Everyone, and welcome to this episode of Inside the Power Slam Ropes podcast. Something. It's Inside the Ropes, but I am Sandra, and I am joined here today by Finley Martin, because Kenny McIntosh is on assignment. He's just doing this little, you know, spoken word tour with Gold Dust, no big deal. You know, he's busy off doing other things. So Finley Martin and I are combining the Inside the Ropes podcast and the Power Slam podcast for just a whole bunch of wrestling conversational goodness. So hello, Finn. How are you today?
I'm very well, Sandra. I'm very well. Nice to be podcasting with you again after, when was the last time? Would it be Survivor Series? Oh, Royal Rumble. Was it Royal Rumble 19? No, we didn't do that.
No, we didn't do Royal Rumble. No, it seems like things just keep coming up when we're supposed to do our, you know, retro podcasting extravaganza. I think we're still on track to do WrestleMania 15, the Raging Climax together. That'll be something, I'm sure. But no, it's great to talk to you. I realized, actually, before we got on the phone, I've never actually just podcasted one-on-one with you. It's always been like Kenny inserting all his opinions in there. So
yes. Yes, and keeping us both in line.
Keeping us both in line. So this could go completely off the rails. We'll see what happens. I don't know. It's been a week. But yeah, so I mean, I figure we'll just kind of do some news, talk Raw and SmackDown. It should be a fun conversation, I think. I was going to say, I know you haven't seen the movie, but I did manage to go and see Fighting with My Family with Mr. Sandra this past week, and I quite enjoyed it. Like, it's not necessarily the best movie I've ever seen or anything like that, but I thought it was pretty fun. It's always kind of fascinating for me to see how wrestling is portrayed in mainstream media situations. And like, I've been actually reading so many positive reviews of it from people who watch wrestling, but also from people who don't watch wrestling. And it's been kind of cool to see wrestling portrayed in a positive way in the media, because I think we've seen a lot of movies like The Wrestler, for instance. I remember being like a big deal when that came out. And that movie actually came out just before I started watching wrestling. So I went to see that with my husband, and I was just like, what the fuck is wrestling? Why do they do these things to themselves? What is, like, it was a very negative portrayal of the business. And so it was kind of nice to see wrestling portrayed well. It wasn't necessarily historically accurate, but, you know, as with these things, when they're based on a true story, they're not necessarily the 100% accurate true story of what happened. But
no.
You know, but it was still a fun movie and whatnot. So I think I would recommend that people see it. Like, it's not necessarily something you need to like run out to the cinema to see. But yeah, I enjoyed it. So that was a good time.
I mean, the word I saw used often in reviews was uplifting, which was, you know, and the great irony, of course, is how it all ended for the lead character, sadly.
Yeah, they don't really go into that. that's not really part of it. It kind of, I mean, I'm not going to like go into spoilers, but if you've seen, obviously, if you watched Paige's career, you know that she wins the Divas Championship, and it's really like, it's a nice moment and that kind of thing. So I think they did a pretty good job of making you feel for the characters. And I think the comparisons between Paige's story and her brother Zach's story, because obviously like Zach didn't get signed by the WWE and Paige did. And, like, just, I don't know. It was just kind of a nice, like, kind of a feel-good movie, and it was fascinating to see like how NXT was portrayed and stuff. So I recommend that people see it if you're interested in that sort of thing. I'm trying to think what else news-wise has happened.
I saw Tommaso Ciampa. What about Tommaso Ciampa?
Yeah, Tommaso Ciampa. This is big, and this is something that I've been trying to like read up on the situation without getting too many NXT spoilers, which has been kind of a tricky situation. But it came out yesterday that Tommaso Ciampa has neck has a neck injury and is going to require a cervical fusion, which is going to take him out of the ring for a long time. So he's going to have to vacate the NXT championship. And I don't know what happens in the Dusty Classic after the episodes that aired. Like, I did watch last night's NXT. What even are we doing, Forgotten Sons and Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch? I will have words for that on Yellow Ropes Forever. But Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano obviously advanced from round one of the Dusty Classic, and I don't really know where the story goes from there. But as far as his NXT championship goes, him vacating the title, I think, it's really just a big bummer, because it seemed like TakeOver Brooklyn was probably going to be where he lost the title anyway, because he and Johnny Gargano are on the main roster. But him being out with injury, it's just, I mean, there's never a good time to be injured, but it seems like just after being called up to the main roster and having so much momentum on the main roster, it's just a big bummer. And I don't know what this means for Johnny Gargano. Like, how do you think they're going to handle this?
Well, it's going to be tricky. I mean, I always felt that Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano were going to struggle on the main roster anyway due to their size. I mean, I know they're super talented. Of course they are. But this is Vince McMahon's show, Raw or SmackDown. He's in charge. And, you know, hark back to the Finn Balor interview prior to the match with Brock Lesnar. And Vince was out there saying, well, I'm not sure if you're big enough, you know, with all this beef in the ring, how are you going to cope? And then we saw what happened in the Balor versus Brock Lesnar match. And I kind of felt like that promo or those comments from Vince were the, you know, leading us down, you know, red herring, leading us down the blind alley like they do to make us think that this is going to happen. And then the opposite of that will happen. And instead, what happened was exactly what Vince had predicted. You're not big and strong enough to defeat Brock Lesnar. So you look
it's kind of a bummer when the heels are proven right in those situations, isn't it? Like, you really want to get behind the underdog and feel like they can do it and get like this uplifting moment. And then, oh no, you just suck. It's fine.
That's right. It's just that, I was right all along. I'm the villain. I was right along. Well, that's not the way it's supposed to play out. And you look at Ciampa and Gargano, and they're not as big as Finn Balor. Now, I'm not saying they would have totally tanked on the main roster, but I don't know how far they would have got given the size that they are. I mean, when they were pitted against the Bar in that match on SmackDown, was it not last week, the week before? Is that right? I think it's 2 weeks ago now.
I want to say it was the week before, because I think last week Johnny Gargano was supposed to face Antonio Cesaro, but then we ended up having the return of the Hardy Boys instead.
That's right, yeah. I mean, there's a huge size difference. Obviously, Ciampa and Gargano went over, and good for them, but there's a huge size difference, and that was always going to be a problem for him on the main roster. So how does Johnny Gargano make it as a singles player now that Ciampa's going to be sidelined until the end of the year? I'm not sure how he fits into all of this. I'm not sure how he fit into it. Maybe as a tag team, they would have done all right. But as a singles player, I fear he could end up on 205 Live. He's only a small guy. So, I mean,
he is. Yeah. And since they brought them up to the main roster, they've actually done quite well, like better than I expected, because this whole recent call-up situation has been fascinating to see how, I mean, a guy like Ricochet is also not very big, right? And they're doing... They seem to be really highlighting this last group of call-ups significantly better than they have the call-ups from January, because other than Lacey Evans, what even are they doing at this point? I guess Heavy Machinery did win the Gauntlet match on Raw, but
it's just a clown show, though, isn't it? You know,
it really is. And so, I mean, but it seems like they really wanted to do right by this group of call-ups, right? Like, they had Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa get wins over very prominent competitors like The Revival, who seem to not be able to win a match now that they are champions, which is frustrating. But like, they've really been kind of treating them with care and treating them like stars, and that's been very refreshing to see. So an injury like this is a big bummer. I mean, it's a weird parallel to what happened in NXT, right? Tommaso Ciampa got injured, attacked Johnny Gargano on his way out. Like, they don't have the luxury of that situation playing. And I don't know what happens on NXT. So storyline-wise, I don't know what they're going to do. If this were just NXT we were talking about, I would kind of trust them to tell the story and handle it with care, because we saw what happened when Aleister Black was injured and couldn't be in the triple threat with Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa, and it spawned into the who attacked Aleister Black situation. That was my favorite thing of the summer. So But on the main roster, I don't know that they're going to tell the nuanced story of Johnny Gargano being without Tommaso Ciampa. I worry for him on the main roster. I don't want him to fade into obscurity because he's perhaps the best wrestler they have on the roster in terms of both character and in-ring work. I think he's definitely in the conversation for it. And I think there are definitely things that he could have done in NXT still, but he's been there for so long that, like, I don't know, it seems like he might just be kind of stuck in limbo, and I don't want to see him end up on 205 Live, even though I love 205 Live. It's like amazing, but it seems like it would be a big step back for him. So I guess we'll just kind of like cross our fingers and hope for the best. And I hope that they see star power in Johnny Gargano, and I don't know, maybe bring Candace up and have them be a team. I have no idea what they're going to do, but
I haven't either. I mean, it's a really tricky one, and I'm not sure what their plans were, but you know, you've got to look at it, try and look at it through Vince McMahon's eyes. Is he going to see those guys as mid-card, top of the card guys? And I can't see him thinking that. I can't see him viewing them that way. The only way he would change his mind was if they came in and got over so spectacularly that in Daniel Bryan fashion, circa 2014, he would have to push them.
Right.
And, you know, there'd have to be this huge groundswell of support. And it's hard to imagine that happening. That takes a long time to develop. So I was really quite concerned for their future on the main roster. Even if this hadn't happened, given the current circumstances, I'm not sure how Gargano can make it in that environment at his size. I don't think he really... The problem was, if you cast your mind back to Royal Rumble, he appeared in the Royal Rumble match, and he just seemed like, you know, he was like just another guy. And if you contrast that with the reaction he got in NXT the previous evening at TakeOver, he was super over in the match with Ricochet. And just to see him in the Royal Rumble match, he was like, he was just... You know, it was almost like a bump dummy. He didn't come across as a star at all. I know it's a new environment for him, but you would think that the people out who are watching and buying tickets to watch the pay-per-views will also watch NXT. You would have thought that a hefty percentage of the audience that are willing to pay WWE ticket prices in 2019 are also network subscribers and probably watch NXT. So that reaction to him in that match did not really bode well. So I felt like he was, you know, he was swimming upstream from the start. So maybe, you know, the Candice Johnny team could have some momentum. You just hope that he doesn't end up getting like dumped on 205 Live and they end up feuding with Mike and Maria, you know, that could be the outcome.
I mean, as much fun as Johnny Gargano and Candice LeRae versus Mike and Maria would be, and I think that it would, I want better for both of them. And I mean, I've been very vocal on Yellow Ropes Forever that I'm not happy with Candice LeRae just being Johnny Gargano's wife. And I remain unhappy that Candice LeRae is just Johnny Gargano's wife. So it might almost be beneficial to have Candice LeRae on the main roster at this point instead of in NXT, just because we need more women on the main roster. We will get to that when we talk about SmackDown. And I think, I mean, she's obviously an incredibly talented performer, so I think that could be a way to go. But I guess we'll see what happens there.
Sure.
I mean, also in the news, Jushin Liger has announced that he's going to be retiring in 2020. It is baffling to me that Jushin Thunder Liger can still do the things that he is able to do. He's in his 50s, isn't he?
Yes. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, he's been doing this since... When did he make his debut? Was it about 87, was it? Or maybe was it earlier than that, 84? No, it must be earlier than that. Because he'd been Jushin Liger for well over 30 years. So, I mean, he's well into his 50s. I mean, I saw him live in September, and he can still do it. You know, he's still, I mean, he's obviously under that costume, he's ageless, but he can still go. Still looks great in the costume, still over as a legend in New Japan and obviously worldwide because everyone knows who he is. He's got to be one of the few wrestlers that's got over in like every country that he's ever worked in. I mean, I remember when he came into WCW in 1991 and the rate at which he got over was just astounding. And he had that famous series of matches with Brian Pillman. Have you seen any of those, Sandra?
I haven't, but that is definitely something I'm going to want to check out because that sounds incredible.
Yeah, he was only in for a couple of months. He captured the WCW light heavyweight title, and they had like a Pillman and Liger had a few famous matches, including one at Super Brawl 2, it would have been. Yeah, Super Bowl 1 was 91, Super Bowl 2 was 92, that's right. It was the undercard of the famous Lex Luger versus Sting match, that's right. And that was like a classic match of the era. But Liger was a guy who just got over like almost immediately. Wherever he went, he was over. He was a star and still is. So, yeah, I mean, it's... I mean, he's put his time in.
You know, yeah, I would say that it's, you know, it's sad that he's announcing his retirement. But at this point, after having the career that he's had and being able to do the things that he can do in the ring, like, I'm convinced that he and Rey Mysterio have some sort of like fountain of magical youth or something that I don't know, they bought from a very flippy devil somewhere, because I have no idea how these men are able to do what they can do after so many years. So, I mean, definitely... if, you know, like whatever Liger's doing in this next year or so, it's going to be worth checking out and kind of like seeing his retirement tour. I'm curious what kind of, you know, dream matches and scenarios they're going to put together. They're saying he's going to retire in the Tokyo Dome, I believe I read. So, yeah, I'm really hoping that I don't know, that they have something really big planned for him, because I think he is someone who is so incredibly worthy of a great send off.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they will have. Absolutely. Of course they will have. I mean, he's been doing this for a long time and... you know, he's held in the highest regard in New Japan, and I'm sure they'll set up one last big run for him, with him possibly trying to win the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title again, and these things will happen, and like, it's his last chance, and they'll be very emotional, and I'm sure it'll be very well done. New Japan are outstanding at this type of thing.
Oh yeah, for sure. And also in the news this past week, some sad news, King Kong Bundy has died. I think he was in his early 60s. And like, I don't know a ton about King Kong Bundy. Like, I know that he was big. And didn't he have a match with The Undertaker? Isn't he part of The Undertaker's whole streak situation?
Yeah, yeah. This was during the era of The Undertaker having terrible matches at WrestleMania. And they brought King Kong Bundy back for WrestleMania 11, I believe it was. And sadly, Bundy's match with The Undertaker was dismal. We know who won that match.
We do.
We know who won that match, but it's not a match that I would urge anyone to check out. But I mean, Bundy was a big deal in his day. I mean, I started watching American wrestling, WWF, in March of 88. So I just missed him, but I did discover his career retrospectively. I remember somebody lending me the tape of his famous cage match with Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 2. And I remember thinking at the time that that was a really exciting match. Hogan had gone into it with storyline rib injuries. So it was like he seemed even more vulnerable, you know, even though Hogan was massive, you know, I mean, what was he, like 315, 20 pounds at the time. This was when he was enormous. But I mean, Bundy was even larger. He was over 400 pounds. And you really felt like Hogan's WWF heavyweight title reign was in peril. You felt like Bundy could defeat him. So he had a huge push going into that match. I remember Bundy bleeding in the match and like, wow, blood, because you didn't see blood that often in the WWF during that era. I always remember that being a really exciting cage match. Of course, Hogan won. But you know, Bundy,
shocking that.
Yeah, but it was all the stories, Sandra. You know, we're both into stories in wrestling. We were always complaining that we don't see more long-term storytelling that we can believe in. And that was a very believable storyline by the standards of the cartoon era. You know, just classic old school booking and selling and all this type of thing. Just this real basic stuff that we don't see enough of. But I mean, Bundy had been a big star in Texas. He'd had a really good run in Memphis as a heel opposite Jerry Lawler, coming to WWF and had a pretty good run there as well for a couple of years. He was a guy that really got over with the five count gimmick. So he'd like have squash matches or face like, you know, low card performers. And he'd hit him with his avalanche splash in the corner. And then he would like demand a five count from the referee. Pin him and like, three's not enough, on a five count. And he spent a long time building him up for his top card run. And he had a pretty damn good run in there. I mean, after he left WWF in 88, his career really, you know, he was still only in his 20s at that point. And he didn't really do that much else of worth, sadly. But he did have a good run from sort of like 81, 82 through to like 88. Big star in his day, no doubt about it.
Yeah, for sure. I'm intrigued to like see some of his Memphis stuff. One of my friends actually has a podcast called 400 Court Street that I did a guest spot on last week. And I watched Memphis wrestling for the first time because I've never seen it before. And so like the first full episode that exists on YouTube that you can find. We did kind of a watch through episode. So I got treated to Handsome Jimmy Valiant and like Coco Ware was in a match. And like, it was, I think, the debut of Wayne Ferris. I can't remember if it was his debut or if it was one of his first matches though in Memphis. And it was fascinating. So like, I'm kind of watching a little bit more Memphis every once in a while with him. So I might request that we do an episode with King Kong Bundy on it just so I can kind of see him in that situation, because that sounds kind of fun. I kind of fell in love with Memphis wrestling and I didn't expect to. Jerry Lawler's still a cretin, but
I guess that would have been about 78, would it? About 78?
It was 78, yeah.
Yeah.
It was right in the storyline where like Heather Feather was campaigning to get a match with a man, and they like have this petition for Heather Feather to sign a contract so that she can wrestle a man, but then they like trick Chuck Malone into signing the contract to have a match with Heather Feather, and it's like this whole intergender wrestling conversation back in 1978 that it feels like the conversation hasn't even changed that much. It was actually really fascinating to watch.
Yeah, and this predated Andy Kaufman as well, didn't it? Yeah, so I mean,
yeah, it was before that.
I mean, what a trailblazing promotion, territory Memphis was. I mean, so many of those things that you thought like ECW invented in like the mid-90s, between 94 and 96, when ECW was at its peak. You know, Memphis had done those like 10, 12, 15, 16 years earlier. And just Jerry Jarrett and Jerry Lawler, obviously were the guys running the show. And the stuff they came up with was just astonishing. A lot of it was in extremely bad taste, viewed through 2019 eyes. But then again, in their defense, lots of things that were on mainstream TV now seem in very bad taste, viewed through 2019 eyes. I think that's fair to say.
And it was a treat to get to see a full music number performed by Handsome Jimmy Valiant. Like, it was incredible. I'll post a link to that when that's out. I think it's supposed to come out this Saturday. But I think, and then the other news from this past week, they did announce on Raw that Tori Wilson is going to be going into the WWE Hall of Fame. Now, I am not really a purveyor of the WWE Hall of Fame. I really don't care very much about the WWE Hall of Fame. Nor am I familiar with the career of one Tori Wilson, because I haven't seen really anything that she's done. And I don't think that Raw or SmackDown really did a great job of highlighting her. Like, they didn't really have effective video packages to really tell me about her career. So I was going to ask you, Finn, what are your memories of Ms. Tori Wilson in the WWE? And do you feel that she is a worthy contender for this year's Hall of Fame?
Well, I mean, the Hall of Fame, I personally don't think she should be going into the Hall of Fame. But in saying that, she was a star. I mean, it's a tricky one. What is the criterion for entry to the Hall of Fame? And that's always really tricky. Is it somebody who's a big star? Or is it somebody who contributed a lot to the business? I mean, I think you need to have been a star and contributed something to the business that people want to watch again. You know, that's like the barometer, the gauge of a good movie. It's a movie that you would want to watch a second time, and you might get something more from it the second time than you did on the first viewing. That to me is the sign of a good movie. And that to me is the sign of a good angle or a good promo or a good match, something you would want to watch more than once. Tori for me was, I mean, she was a star. I mean, she was part of the Invasion storyline in 2001. She was in some memorable angles, like the famous one where Vince was literally caught with his pants down by Linda. There was the ridiculous, just absurd Dawn Marie storyline with Tori's dad, Al Wilson. I mean, that was just one of the wackiest things WWE did during that era.
Oh, I've heard of this. Is this where she like shagged him to death or something?
That's right, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I have heard of this.
But I mean, really, that was Dawn Marie's storyline and angle rather than Tori's. I mean, so she was really the star of that. I mean, she came into WCW when things were just falling apart and she was pushed, and she actually did well for herself, for somebody who really had no wrestling experience. I mean, she'd been a fitness model, and I think she'd done some acting, but mostly she was known as a fitness model. She was like in Muscle Mag International. I mean, that was how Trish Stratus was discovered, as a fitness model. That was where lots of females were discovered by wrestling in the 98, 99, 2000 period. So I thought she did quite well in WCW, but I mean, WCW was falling apart that time. She was not somebody who really knew how to, she didn't know how to wrestle. She kind of was trained, but she was never really a wrestler to me. But I don't think she ever really considered herself to be a wrestler. But she did have a good run with WWE. There's no doubt about that. You know, she was a star. I think she was well-liked backstage. And I will say she is somebody that did suffer for the art. And she did do a lot of matches, and she ended up with a pretty bad back injury as a result of all the bumps, and was in a lot of pain after she left wrestling. So she wasn't just somebody who just swanned around and did nothing. I don't think she really did a whole lot that you'd want to watch twice, but she did get in the ring and she did take punishment. She did take bumps. So, you know, she was somebody who did suffer for her art. So, I don't know. I don't really see her as a Hall of Fame caliber talent. But obviously WWE does, and they're the ones who decide these things.
It kind of seems like they have such a quota for the Hall of Fame, right? Like, you always have to have kind of like one woman that they're going to induct. And I guess this year, in a way, they're kind of almost inducting two women because China's going in as a member of DX. But it seems like they're really just running out of female performers that seem Hall of Fame worthy, because it has not been a company that has been historically kind to female wrestlers. No. And I think we're seeing right now in WWE, there are certain talents that are definitely Hall of Fame bound in, you know, 10, 20 years. But the pool is kind of shallow, because who else do they really have left to induct if they want to have their obligatory female inductee? Right? Like,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, there was a huge, I mean, after Trish and Lita retired, I mean, there was like a period there where there weren't really, I mean, it always amused me when Stacey Keibler was going out with George Clooney. There was this sort of big comedy that, oh, they've got to get Stacey, they've got to induct Stacey, because then perhaps George Clooney will appear at the Hall of Fame ceremony. And that was always something that amused me. And obviously that relationship ended and Stacey's now off living her life, and good for her. But it was always amusing to me that you just imagine George Clooney there at the Hall of Fame ceremony. But you're right. I mean, it's like, I mean, in several years, in like 5, 6, 7 years time, there's going to be a lot of people that they can induct. But as things stand now, not as many. I mean, I know Kim's linked with Impact Wrestling, and she went into their Hall of Fame. I mean, she didn't really have a particularly good run in WWE, let's face it. She really had her best years in Impact.
So, well, and I was going to say, Gail Kim, I mean, notoriously eliminated herself from a battle royal and then exited the company because she was so unhappy with her position in WWE because she was never used properly there. So, I mean, she is a fantastic wrestler and worthy of accolades, but I just don't know that the WWE Hall of Fame would really make a lot of sense.
Well, that's right. I mean, I think they try and see it as you know, because there's people in there who didn't really have, like, for instance, Stan Hansen's in there, isn't he? I mean, he did have the run with Bruno, and he did do other things in the company. Antonio Inoki's in there as well. Obviously, he did stuff with WWF back in the day. He, you know, let's not get into it, but he was, according to some history books, once WWF champion. He defeated Bob Backlund. That's not something that's officially acknowledged by WWF. And New Japan and WWF had a long business relationship. And Inoki was a huge star, like in Japan, in like bigger than Hulk Hogan in America. So, I mean, I absolutely understand why Inoki's in there, and he deserves to be inducted. So, it's more, I think they more view it now as a Hall of Fame for all of wrestling. But yeah, I take your point about Gail Kim. She did not really excel herself in WWE and Impact, or TNA rather, or TNA Impact rather, was the company in which she was a star and produced her best output. So yeah, that's fair enough. But you're right, there's the pool of female performers who can be inducted, who are no longer wrestling, who are worthy. It has shrunk. There isn't that many people out there who they could choose. So, yeah. But in years to come, they'll be fine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think in like 5-10 years, once, like, I don't know, I mean, who knows how long, like, Natalia is going to wrestle, or Mickie James, I would say, is definitely someone who would be in contention for that sort of thing. Yes. But right now they're just in that weird, I mean, I'm sure they'll induct the Bellas at some point.
Oh, of course.
Probably relatively soon. but, you know, and you know what? Good for them. I think the Bellas 100% deserve it. I'm obviously a Bella fan. And I'm
well,
not really
look sure. Look at all that TV money they brought in for me from the E-Channel. So
yeah,
of course
exactly.
They're worthy.
Exactly. So, and you know what? They'll get a rating. It's great. But yeah, I mean, the Hall of Fame, I do not plan to go to the Hall of Fame, but good for Tori Wilson. Good for her.
Yeah.
Shall we get into Raw?
Yes. Yes, let's.
Okay. So I feel like Raw was a little bit more eventful than SmackDown this week. And there was a lot going on. The first thing that kind of happened, the show opened with Roman Reigns. Good dude Roman Reigns coming out. I am such a fan of good dude Roman Reigns, Finn.
Did you hear any boos there? I mean, this was Philadelphia. I mean,
I heard a few. I think I heard a few, but it wasn't overwhelming. Like, and I think the people who were booing him were kind of drowned out, and there were thank you Roman chants, and he looked like legitimately surprised, like, because he is in Philadelphia, right? And I mean, obviously, famously winning the Royal Rumble in Philadelphia was not his crowning moment as a babyface who was getting a good reception, shall we say. And so for Philadelphia to be overwhelmingly cheering Roman Reigns, just it felt like kind of a bizarro world, but in the best possible way. And he looks so genuinely happy to be back, like just as a dude. Like he comes across as very likable now. And it's kind of refreshing and lovely. And so good dude Roman Reigns comes out and he, you know, he has...
Yeah, it doesn't feel like he's playing a character, does he?
Feels authentic. And I think that's always been the problem with Roman Reigns, has been that he feels inauthentic and he feels like a manufactured product. Kenny and I were talking about this last week. And now that he feels like just a dude, like a good dude who wants to be a good dude, and he's coming out cutting promos like this. He talks to Seth Rollins. And I like the friendship between Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins in this opening promo. You know, like Seth being very supportive of Roman too, saying, you know, obviously, like, I won the Royal Rumble, I'm going to face Brock Lesnar, but if anyone else has the right to face Brock Lesnar, it's you, because you had to vacate the title, you never lost it. And I know how that feels, because Seth Rollins obviously has had to vacate a title due to injury before, so he knows how that feels. I liked that storyline thread. I liked the fact that they brought that up. And Roman Reigns says that he has a favor to ask Seth Rollins. He wants to get the band back together. And Seth is like, anything but that. Like, I do not want to get the Shield back together. I do not want to deal with crazy Dean Ambrose. And that kind of started a show long thread with, you know, Seth Rollins going to Dean Ambrose and talking to him, calling him his wrestling soulmate, which made me have all sorts of feelings. And then Roman Reigns also talked to Dean Ambrose later on in the show, kind of saying, like, Dean, I know you went through some stuff too. Like, I know me leaving really affected you. Like, Roman Reigns kind of talking to Dean Ambrose, almost as if, like, Dean Ambrose has been going through, like, a mental illness situation or, like, an anxiety situation, is kind of how I read that scene, which was very fascinating to me. And in the end, we did actually see the reunion of the Shield at the end of the show. So, Finn, I know you had some thoughts about the Shield situation and how it's all played out. How are you reading this, and how effective has it been for you?
Well, I mean, if you judge it by how it was received in the venue in Philadelphia, it was a big hit on the night. So, I mean, for me to sit here and pull it to pieces, even though that's what I'm now going to do.
What else are we here for, if not that?
It sort of makes me look a bit foolish. Yeah, I mean, as you said, Roman Reigns opened the show. You know, maybe he should change his now name to Joe Reigns. Now he's just this regular guy. Not Roman Reigns, Joe Reigns. Maybe he needs to do that.
I mean, he could just be like, I mean, he did say his name is Joe. We know this.
Exactly. So he's this real guy. He's not this manufactured character that's shoved down our throats. He's this easygoing guy that really likable. He's your buddy. You could go for a drink with Roman Reigns, you know. You know, he'd lend you money if you couldn't pay, well, maybe not if you couldn't pay your gas bill, but you know what I mean. He's a nice guy. You can believe in Roman Reigns. So then he'd call Seth Rollins out, and then they then call Dean Ambrose out, and Ambrose stood on the stage and he's torn. Does he accept their offer to put the band back together or not? And then Elias, the villain, the heel, he comes out, smashes him with a guitar, and that's it. So we've got to wait around. As you said, the show, this was a show-long storyline. I thought they did a good job with the plot in there. We kept going back to it. And there was lots of different elements to this storyline throughout the program. And there was no repetition either, which I thought was really good. So later in the show, Dean Ambrose said it was Elias had actually pinned Dean Ambrose in the match, which I sort of found surprising. I mean, we know Dean Ambrose is leaving. They've told us that. But I was still sort of surprised that Elias had scored the win, that they didn't go with a non-finish or something like that, since they were putting the Shield back together. And Dean Ambrose is supposed to be a star or somebody who's worthy of mixing with Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns, or Joe Reigns, whatever you want to call him. So Reigns and Rollins come out afterwards, after Ambrose is lost to Elias. Ambrose refuses to accept their offer of friendship or teaming up again, walks through the crowd. At this point, Baron Corbin, Drew McIntyre and Lashley came out and they trashed Reigns and Rollins, then headed down to the ring and started beating down Reigns and Rollins. And at that point, Ambrose turns round, comes down the stairs, runs back into the ring and helps Reigns and Rollins run off the villains. And then they do the Shield symbol with the three fists and everyone cheers. So, I mean, it was obviously a success in the building. My only complaint about it, Sondra, is that it did seem odd to me that Dean Ambrose was the one, as we know, who turned on Seth Rollins. He was the one who said the horrible things about Roman Reigns after Reigns had to bow out and relinquish the title due to leukemia. Why were the babyfaces wanting to reconcile with him? Why wasn't it vice versa? Why wasn't Ambrose the one who was wanting to reconcile with Rollins and Reigns? That's how the story to me should have really played out. And instead we have the two faces sort of almost sort of demeaning themselves and almost not begging, but not far off, certainly pleading with Ambrose to put the Shield back together. So that's my only complaint about the storyline. I thought the whole way it played out was the wrong way around. But in the venue, in the building on the night, it was a hit. So who am I to say?
See, I can understand what you're saying, but for me, it works better, I think, this way, just because if Dean Ambrose were suddenly like, oh, I want to get back with my friends, I want to get back with Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns, then, you know, Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins rejecting Dean Ambrose would feel almost a little bit like dickhead behavior. Like, it wouldn't, because obviously Dean Ambrose said horrible things about Roman Reigns, like, you deserve to have cancer. That's not a cool thing to say about anyone. So I would understand, you know, Seth Rollins throughout the show was hesitant to accept Dean Ambrose back into the fold. I kind of like that it was good dude Roman Reigns who was like, look, I just went through some stuff. I went through some health stuff. Tomorrow's not guaranteed. I want to get my pals back together. I'm willing to forgive all of the craziness. Like, it actually felt like a genuine character motivation for good dude Roman Reigns, who's like my new favorite person, apparently. I just really like him. And so I think, you know, him coming back and him being like, this is what I went through. I understand that, like, me leaving and my illness had an effect on Dean. Like, Roman almost seems like he's concerned for Dean's well-being, because Dean Ambrose is basically a crazy person, right? Like, that's kind of what we've seen. And in weeks past, you know, even Dean Ambrose asking Seth Rollins a couple weeks ago, like, where were you when I was getting beaten up? And Seth Rollins is like, what are you talking about? You turned on me. You said our friend deserved to have cancer. Why am I going to be saving you? But Dean Ambrose doesn't really seem to understand the effect that his actions have on the world around him, because he's a lunatic fringe trademark, right? So he kind of went off the deep end, and Roman is kind of treating it like, you're my friend who went off the deep end, but I want you back in my life because friendship is important to me. And I mean, I'm a big fan of friendship in wrestling, so then maybe that's just what just warms my heart about this whole thing. But But it being Roman that wants to get the band back together, and then Dean Ambrose being kind of hesitant because maybe he questions whether he belongs with them. He obviously had the situation with Elias that was distracting him throughout the show. He had, you know, to face Elias and have that match. And then I think in the end, Dean Ambrose realized that friendship can triumph and they're stronger together. And yes, it's cheesy and I don't care, but I just really, really like it. And it made me happy. Like, I was not someone who wanted a Shield reunion at all. Like, I wanted Roman Reigns to just be good dude Roman Reigns on his own away from the Shield. But I think because of timing and because, you know, Roman's like, you know, tomorrow's never guaranteed. We don't know what's happening. I can't remember if they alluded specifically to the fact that Dean is leaving, but he was
Yes, they did, right?
He was
in
like,
in fact, at one point on commentary, Renee Young said that that Ambrose was moving on to greener pastures. And then there's a pause, and Corey Graves obviously was instructed to say this. Renny, what are you on about? This is WWE. It doesn't get any greener than this.
Sure it doesn't, Corey. Sure it doesn't. But I mean, making allusion to the fact that Dean is leaving, I think because that feels real and authentic to me, like that's a real thing. He is leaving after April. This is the only time they have to get the Shield back together if they want to do it. And so I think because what's being presented to me on my screen feels authentic in terms of what we know backstage too, it just worked for me. And like, even though I didn't want a Shield reunion and I've hated previous Shield reunions, like it's always seemed like it was some sort of nonsensical thrown together threat arose, right? Like in the past, it would be the equivalent of like Bobby Lashley, Baron Corbin and Drew McIntyre getting together and being this big menace in WWE, and the Shield has to valiantly reunite to take down the menace or something like that. And it's just never felt authentic. It's always felt very manufactured as just a way to get the Shield back together because that's what WWE wants to do. And in this case, them just being like, nope, I had cancer. Now I want my pals back. Let's be friends. For some reason, that just works better for me. And like in the end, when Dean was like vacillating and going back and forth and was emotionally torn, and Seth and Roman are doing the, you know, the Shield fist bump thing. And it's just like, come on, Dean, join in. And when he finally did, I got really excited. So if it can kind of win me over as someone who was not looking for a Shield reunion anytime ever, then I don't know. It seemed effective and it kind of did its job.
All I can say is, what about rules and boundaries? What about consequences for one's actions? What about atonement? How can Rollins and Reigns trust Ambrose again after what he did last year? That's all I've got to say about it, Sondra. Let's move on to something else.
I understand. I mean, I guess you could say the same for Seth Rollins, though. I mean, he's turned on the Shield too. Brothers fight, Finn. It's going to be okay. But also on Raw.
This is fresher in mind now, so this is annoying me more.
Yeah, well, and I think timing is really the issue here, right? Like, they don't have time to, like, have Ambrose atone for his sins or whatever because, you know, he's leaving in April. So it all feels very rushed together. Like, yeah. I definitely agree with you there. But it's just kind of, you know, they're victims of timing and of not having, you know, a longer period of time to do the story, I guess. But
well, they didn't have to do this story. They're doing this story because it's an easy story to tell. And it's one that gets a cheap pop. That's why they're doing it, you know. Anyway.
You're not wrong there. You're not wrong there. Also on Raw, the Revival defeated Aleister Black and Ricochet by disqualification, which means the Revival technically got a win as tag team champions, but it was by disqualification only because Bobby Roode and Chad Gable decided to attack Aleister Black and Ricochet, and the Revival are the least interesting part of their own tag team championship story. And I want to scream, Finn, why can't the Revival just win matches and be great wrestlers on Raw? They have been my favorite tag team for so long.
I just want these guys to get some promo time backstage. I mean, it's like, it's still, I mean, I can tell the difference between these two, but I have to think about it. And it's just, I used to be, when they were in NXT, they were terrific, weren't they? And like, you're really
and they're great on the microphone too. Like, I would love to hear Scott Dawson cut his witty and adorable promos again. And I it is kind of funny though, because when the Revival were standing in the ring to start the match, after not getting a televised entrance as tag team champions, not that I'm salty about this, I super am, but the Revival are standing there and Dash Wilder has like trimmed down his beard so it's more of a goatee situation, legitimately would not have recognized him if he weren't wearing matching trunks to Scott Dawson and standing next to him holding a belt.
I mean, that says it all. I mean, you know, I mean, at one point in the show, Stephanie McMahon's talking to the two fellas from Saturday Night Live. Okay. And she's saying, oh, yes, well, WWE, you know, it's complex. It's multi-led. No, it isn't. That's what it should be. That's what you probably think it is in your mind, but it isn't. And like with the Revival, it's like, wow, we're getting some promo time for these two guys at least every week. As you say, they can talk. Let's get to know these guys. And they're just showing them out there in the ring. It's like, why? People don't have a reason to care about them. As long as we are not given a reason to care about the Revival as a team, how can we really care about their tag team title reign? So it has a knock-on effect with the championship as well. So it's a real shame for these guys because they are so talented. And when was it? Was it last week? Or was it the week before when they won the title? When they had the match with Gable and Bobby Roode?
That was February 13, I believe.
Oh, right. Okay.
So because it was in Grand Rapids. I didn't go, but because I had to work. But I remember that the Revival won the tag team championships in my city when I couldn't go and I was really bummed.
Oh, that's a shame. So that's actually going back quite a few weeks. But that match was a hell of a match. And it wasn't until the very end that the fans got into the near falls. And I felt so sad for the guys. And I thought, I'm so disappointed for them that they're out there putting together this tremendous match and there's no atmosphere. And there's no atmosphere because the characters are over okay, you could say that these guys are not going to get over anyway. I disagree. I think they will get over or can get over if they are given some promo time, some storylines that matter, and just all these tools to get them over. You're right. This match here was just like, this should have been much bigger than it was. And until they start investing some TV time and some creative attention into Wilder and Dawson, it's just the same thing is going to happen each week.
Aleister Black and Ricochet are definitely the shiny new toys, right? Like, and they are, and they're fantastic, but they are a thrown together tag team. And so I guess it's kind of frustrating to see the Revival having been fodder for like the thrown together tag teams on Raw too. Kind of, it's the same situation with the Bar on SmackDown, but at least the Bar aren't the actual tag team champions at this point. They're former champions, but it's frustrating because the Raw tag team division, it feels like, needs the shakeup more than really anything. Like, the Raw tag team division and the SmackDown women's division desperately need the superstar shakeup so badly because, I mean, the other tag team representation we had on the show on this Raw was Heavy Machinery winning a gauntlet match against, what was it, the Ascension, the B team, and Hawkins and Ryder?
Hawkins and Ryder, exactly, yeah. Those were the three other teams. Oh, sorry, the four other teams. Three teams fed to Heavy Machinery. So there is quite a few teams. We've actually got, what's that, seven teams? That's quite a lot of teams.
It's quite a few, but they're all treated like jokes. I mean, yeah. all of the teams in that gauntlet match are treated like jokes. And I mean, yes, obviously they are lower card tag teams, and that's fine. You need lower card tag teams, but they're being presented as jokes. I mean, that segment where the Ascension and Hawkins and Ryder and the B team are all talking about like, oh, I can't stand these new NXT call-ups. Really? Do you hear you right now? Where did you come from? Like, other than Kurt Hawkins, who, like, I mean, he was a staple in NXT Redemption back in the day before NXT kind of had its revamp and moved to Full Sail. But like, all of those guys have NXT ties. I mean, Zack Ryder was with Mojo Rawley as the Hype Bros in NXT. So even Zack Ryder, who, you know, didn't come from NXT, had a long stay there. And yeah, I mean, the Ascension were created in NXT. Bo Dallas was NXT champion. You wouldn't know it, but Bo Dallas was NXT champion. And it's still my favorite title reign of all time, and I stand by it. So, but it's frustrating because I'm just saying, he did a slideshow presentation about going to Disney World after winning the title. It was fantastic.
Okay, that's all the explanation I need.
You know me.
I mean, and that segment backstage with the Ascension, Zack Ryder and Kurt Hawkins B team, I mean, it was just garbage. I mean, Ryder said of Otis that he looked like Chris Farley in an SNL skit gone bad. Chris Farley died in 1997.
Accurate.
I mean, it was just like, and then Victor called Otis a dumbbell. You're saying, oh, Otis is really strong. Well, that's because he's a dumbbell. Like, I mean, it was just like, I mean, I know the joke was not supposed to be funny, but the content of this skit backstage was just garbage. It was just garbage writing. I mean,
it's just dire. And then, I mean, like, treating Otis basically just like a joke because, you know, I don't like getting my feelings hurt and now I'm angry. Like, that being his character motivation. Like, I know that Heavy Machinery are not necessarily going to be a main event tag team, and that's fine. You know, like, they're comedy guys, and I love them. Like, I love Otis Dozovich. I think he is incredible. And he's like, he's hilarious, like, genuinely hilarious. But him being reduced to, like, oh, people make fun of me because I look like a gnome and am square or whatever, and that hurts my feelings, and now I'm mad. Like, it just seems like such lazy storytelling to me.
Yeah. And I've got no neck. We've got a lot of mileage out of that already. He doesn't have a neck. I mean, it's like...
It's hilarious when you say that 12 times in a row. Oh my gosh, next week, you know what we'll find out, Finn? Otis Dozovich still doesn't have a neck, and it's going to be hilarious again, I bet.
Yeah. So, I mean,
I roll my eyes.
But yeah, you're right about that. We've got a lot of tag teams, but I mean, most of them aren't over. I mean, you can't push the Ascension as serious players again. It's impossible. I think there's a storyline. I said this on a previous podcast. I think there's a storyline with Zach and Hawkins, because Hawkins has run up this incredible losing streak. There is a story there of him actually getting that first win, but I don't think they can be bothered to tell it. It's just
a bummer, because I think that story is fascinating, because Hawkins has lost now 262 times in a row, I believe it was, after Raw. And, like, they've been telling that story on social media. They even released merchandise with, like, you know, tick marks and whatnot saying, like, oh, my losing streak. So there is a good story to tell there. And Zack Ryder being the guy who, you know, has been there for so long and is dissatisfied with constantly being overlooked. I mean, he got his WrestleMania moment winning the Intercontinental Championship and then immediately lost it the next night to The Miz. Like, Zack Ryder's whole career in WWE has been getting to the pinnacle or, like, almost reaching something and then having it swept out from under him, or being pushed off a stage in a wheelchair by Kane for reasons.
You're quite right. I mean, he's a guy that sort of that has been over on some level, not really so much now, but certainly back at 2011, 2012, before that whole Kane fiasco debacle just ruined him. The Kane, it was like during the Kane and dreadful Kane and Cena feud, wasn't it?
I don't like to use the term buried very often because I think it's, like, overused by a lot of wrestling fans, but I think Zack Ryder is kind of the definition of someone who was actually buried on television.
Yeah, I think so as well. He's somebody that he got over. It's like, right, he wasn't our creation, so we're going to show all those fans who think he's a star that he's not actually a star. And WWE has done that many times over the years, and I'm not quite sure. Well, I sort of do have an idea why they do it, but it makes no sense if you look at it, if you take emotion out of it, if you take, you know, hatred or meanness out of it. It makes no sense.
It seems like if they could put, like, you know, some ego and meanness aside and stop with the power plays, they could actually make more money, because, like, it, you know, characters like Zack Ryder or whatever. And, like, I mean, in the tag team division, obviously now I guess we have Bobby Roode and Chad Gable kind of. Is it a triple threat match that they're having at Fastlane with Bobby Roode and Chad Gable and Aleister Black and Ricochet and The Revival?
I think so, yeah. I think it is.
So, that match should be incredible. I'm excited about it. But it, I mean, like you say, they haven't really been given a lot of promo time to care. And I think the most interesting tag team in that scenario is the thrown together tag team of Ricochet and Aleister Black, just because they're the shiny new toys on the roster. So the whole situation is just kind of an exercise in frustration. Another exercise in frustration, kind of, for some people, but I don't know how you feel about this. Stephanie McMahon brings Charlotte Flair and Becky Lynch out to the ring. And earlier on in the show, she's talked about how Ronda Rousey has vacated her women's title. Now, Ronda last week did not say that she vacated the title. She was just very frustrated with Stephanie McMahon, laid the title down, and was like, put Becky in this match or I'm not going to defend this belt because, you know, like, I'm Ronda Rousey and I can do these things. So Stephanie McMahon has been saying how Ronda Rousey vacated the title. She brings out Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair, two SmackDown superstars, to sign a contract for the Raw Women's Championship that has been vacated by Ronda Rousey. This doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense. Like, I understand what they're doing, trying to get to the triple threat at WrestleMania, and that part of it I like. But if you kind of examine the logistics of, okay, if the Raw Women's Championship is vacated, shouldn't you maybe choose some Raw superstars to fight for it, theoretically? But, I mean, I guess Charlotte Flair was already like slated for the WrestleMania main event. It's just the mental gymnastics in this story are kind of like, I feel like they're unnecessarily complicating things in a lot of ways. But in the end, I mean, the promo segment overall, I really did enjoy because Stephanie McMahon brings out Charlotte and Becky. Becky Lynch, who apparently we just need to wrap in all the bubble wrap because now she has knee injury and she has bruised ribs. And after Ronda attacks her later on in the segment, her arm is all busted up. Like, Becky Lynch is not doing very well. But Stephanie wants her to sign a hold harmless agreement so that she can't sue WWE or get angry at them or something if physical combat happens.
It's just weird, is it? When they do... Over the years, they brought this angle out. They wheel this one out from time to time. And you think, well, why are you bringing this one out? You know, what's the point?
And it seems especially strange to me, given that Becky Lynch was pulled from the Survivor Series match with Ronda Rousey. And obviously, like, that was a legitimate injury.
Yes.
There was no way she could have competed in that match, right? Like, she was concussed and had a broken nose / face. Yeah. And, like, there was no way she could have done it. But if you, like, this is where sometimes if you put thought into wrestling, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. Because wouldn't Becky Lynch have wanted to sign this whole harmless agreement to have her match with Ronda at Survivor Series?
Well, I mean, I guess so, yeah. But as you say, I mean, reality got in the way there. So,
right.
I mean, we learned earlier on the program from Stephanie that Becky Lynch had been reinstated and all charges against her had been dropped. And it was just like, I would have liked to have seen Lynch maybe try and find a way to overcome this. I mean, people could say, well, she's the Stone Cold Steve Austin for the current generation. And I think her character's a really watered-down version of Stone Cold, because Stone Cold would have found a way around this. He wouldn't have simply been reinstated. So I thought that was fairly weak. But, I mean, you know, you could say, well, they booked themselves in a corner and Fastlane's coming up and they had to do something. It's like, well, yeah, well, don't do that in the first place. That then results in you having to... do a U-turn to undo the thing that you should never have done in the first place. But, you know, that's WWE at the moment. So she was reinstated and that whole storyline just, it was as if it had never happened. So I thought that was quite weak. And
it was bizarre because last week Stephanie was so firm with Ronda that no, it's a hard no. I'm not having Becky Lynch back. I'm not reinstating her. That's absolutely 100% not happening. And now all of a sudden she's just reinstated. Like,
at that point, what they should have done was they just said, well, we're doing this because you're out of control on Twitter and we just need to keep it in the ring.
Yeah. Yep.
They could have said that. That would actually have been really funny had they said something like that.
Yeah, yeah, so I mean,
there was a bit of a hoo-ha, wasn't there, about the things they were tweeting to each other, they were using language that
sure. And I mean, that gets into the whole work shoot thing. I mean, we can talk about that with Triple H and Batista in a little bit too, but you know, Ronda using Becky's shoot name on Twitter, brother, and then saying that, you know, I don't care what happens, I'm gonna beat the shit out of you for real. Ronda was one of the tweets, I think, attacked Becky's armbar. Like, she said, like, oh, that fake-ass armbar that doesn't even work and all this stuff that Ronda was selling for in the picture that Becky posted of it. So the Twitter situation has been very interesting, I think, with Ronda Rousey and Becky Lynch. A lot of people just hate Ronda Rousey for it. Like, they say that she's exposing the business and all this stuff. And I think that kind of played into the story here because Ronda Rousey shows up to Raw. She's in the parking lot. She's angry. She's very much angry face Ronda. And she, you know, she says to Stephanie, I didn't vacate my title. I wanted you to have a week to think about what to do, and I don't like what you came up with. I wanted you to insert Becky into the match, not exclude me. And I thought Ronda came across really well here. I thought she was fantastic. Her promo style is not polished, and it's always very, like, very quick and very, like, she's angry and, like, she can't form words properly because, you know, she's in her head and she's angry and she wants to fight people. And that makes it more effective for me in a way. Like, when she comes across well, like she did here, she actually, Ronda Rousey basically kind of turned heel on the crowd here, too. She says, you know, I tried to respect this business. I tried to do what I could. Like, I came in, I have worked so hard. And, you know, what did you do? You booed me out of the building, you know, and she's taking
in Los Angeles at the Staples Center.
Yes.
She mentioned that, didn't she, by name. So, yeah, she was really upset,
And it seems like Ronda Rousey, the human, was legitimately very upset about that. Like, because that promo did not go well when they were booing her out of the building that day. And I think it works for me because they're taking that real life story of, you know, Ronda Rousey as a person. A lot of people thought she would never turn heel because she just wants to be cheered and adored. But I think her channeling that anger and channeling it back toward the crowd and making it fuel her fight with Becky and Charlotte that feels authentic, and that makes me want to see them fight, you know? And so Rhonda does attack Becky, puts her in an arm bar after this. So Becky Lynch just is not doing super well. And then they go off the air with Rhonda Rousey kind of standing tall over Becky Lynch. Charlotte Flair just kind of fucks off up the ramp and is like, I want no part of this. I am going to be my goddess self, and I am going to stay far away from the Ronda Rousey, Becky Lynch shenanigans and not get hurt and be the queen that I am and probably say woo to you. It did make me laugh that Ronda Rousey said, damn the man, screw the woo, no more Mrs. Nice Bitch, because now Ronda's like, I don't know, said that she's releasing t-shirts on Twitter or something, and one of them says, damn the man. And Empire Records is my favorite movie, so all I can think of course, is damn the man, save the Empire. And it makes me laugh that she's acting like she came up with this catchphrase. Like, she's so clever because she said, damn the man first. And it's like, I don't think you're the first one to say that, Ronda. But I don't know. What did you make of this whole segment, the mental gymnastics, the storytelling? How did it come across to you?
Well, Rhonda was the first one to say that in this segment on this program.
That is accurate.
Well, I mean, if we overlook the whole thing that you were saying there about why have we got these two SmackDown players fighting for the Raw women's title, well, I think we've just kind of got to let that one go, because we know these are the stars of the show and no one else in WWE, no other females in WWE are in their league. So let's just let that one go. Yeah, Rhonda came out. She gets herself really worked up. She gets totally into the zone. You can see that she sort of convinces herself that it's all real, and that's how it works for her. Mm-hmm. I mean, I often think that she speaks too quickly and she just needs to slow it down, but she was intelligible here. Sometimes she's incomprehensible, but I thought she was all right here, and it was believable that she would be mad. The stipulation set for Fastlane is Lynch versus Charlotte. And if Lynch wins, she will be added to the Mania match, making it a triple threat match, which is what we've expected all along, or at least for the last few weeks. So, I mean, I quite enjoyed the segment. I thought Stephanie was a little bit too in your face at various points of it. And it was
Stephanie McMahon? Never.
Yeah, so that was just she was a bit overbearing, as she is. But she did withdraw. The thing I didn't like about it was I felt that Becky Lynch should have had at least one comeback on Ronda Rousey when Ronda's beaten her down. Didn't matter that Ronda left her lane at the end. That was fine. I had no objection to that at all. That's how it should have ended, because we think we know what's going to happen at WrestleMania. We don't know, but we think we know what's going to happen there. So, you know, again, harking back to the Becky Lynch, she's the modern day Stone Cold. Stone Cold would have had at least one comeback. And if she'd started making a comeback on Ronda, and then Ronda had used some dastardly method to take Becky down again by hitting her in the knee or whatever with a crutch, she would have got booed even louder. So I didn't really think the response to this beatdown was as intense as it could have been. So I felt the layout could have been better. I felt Becky should have had that comeback and Ronda should have done something really evil and vicious and dastardly. Really, because, I mean, apparently she turned heel in this segment. We're both in agreement on that one, aren't we?
It seemed that way. I mean, normally when people are attacking the crowd and whatnot, that's kind of when you know that it's a heel turn.
So had she done that as well, that to me would have totally cemented the whole thing, you know, and we would have been, yes, Ronda's a villain. And I think that's a good role for her to play. I think that's how she is leaving at WrestleMania. She needs to go into that match, you know, as a heel. So it's Lynch as a tweener, babyface, whatever you want to call her, versus two heels, because that psychologically makes sense and should create the reaction that WWE is desirous of on the night. So that would be my only complaint, was that Lynch should have had at least one comeback, and she didn't. I kind of felt that she had her nose rubbed in the mat there. I kind of felt she was treated a bit like a jobber. And I'm sure it's all going to work out well in the end, but I'm just talking just on this, on the night. And then afterwards, it kind of seemed like the timing of the whole thing was a little bit off, because we went backstage and we had another Stephanie promo. And she was like, she referred to Ronda as a loose cannon. She's out of control. So that was kind of a bit difficult to get your head around, because I think Stephanie this week was a heel. Did you Was that your evaluation of things?
Who even knows anymore? I have no idea. Like, Stephanie's Stephanie. She's always going to be Stephanie. She's always going to be infuriating. Ending the show on Stephanie McMahon just seems so unnecessary. It seems like this is, you know, it is interesting watching this and watching the Attitude Era simultaneously on Retro Raw, because you're right. Like, Steve Austin would have more of a comeback, and he would, I guess, feel a little more in control of his own destiny than Becky Lynch does. Like, They've been having Becky Lynch come out in crowds and, you know, attack people, and she got arrested, and all that's been kind of cool. But it seems like they're almost trying to make her like a Daniel Bryan sympathetic character as well, by like constantly getting beaten down and constantly getting held down. And, you know, what does the authority know how to do? They know how to hold people down so that, you know, people will get behind them and whatnot. But I think it's just kind of unnecessary to beat Becky down so much like they have in the past few weeks, because like, she's already over. She's already the biggest star. And it almost seems like the reaction to Becky is getting a little bit weaker.
Yeah.
And I think that's a little bit troubling to me, because, I mean, Becky Lynch has an aura about her. She has an aura of star power about her. But she's starting to feel a little bit more like on even keel with the other two women in the match, and I don't want her on even keel. I want her to be Becky fucking Lynch, like, star of the world and star of my heart. So like, having her have so many injuries and have so much to go against, like, I understand what they're trying to do, but I think they might just be going a little bit overboard with it.
So I mean, at least on SmackDown something did happen in her favor, but we'll get to that in a moment. Let's not forget to mention the Triple H and Batista promo.
Yes, I was definitely going to bring that up. And I'm curious what you think about this, because Triple H, he's using words like this, you know, I wasn't at Ric Flair's birthday party for Ric Flair. I was there for Richard Flair, and he was doing the I'm going to use your shoot name, brother, so that this feels real. And this is something that I've never liked in wrestling. I didn't like it when CM Punk said this is Phil Brooks talking to Paul Levesque. I didn't like it when Dusty Rhodes came out and said, I am, you know, I'm not speaking as Dusty Rhodes right now. I'm speaking as Virgil Runnels. I didn't like it on Retro Raw when they said Salvatore Sincere's name is actually Tom Brandy. I didn't think it was that effective then. but it's one of those things that just, to me, I understand what they're trying to do, because they're trying to make it seem real and trying to make it seem authentic. But to me, it just kind of highlights that everything else on the show is scripted, and it seems like they're trying to push this feud above everything else in that way, right? Like, if you're trying to highlight a feud above everything else, why would you be doing that with Triple H and Batista? Which, I just don't think it needed that element, especially when you have a lot of the work shoot aspects of, like, Becky versus Ronda happening at the same time, and that's your actual main event. So I thought Triple H delivered the promo very, very well. I think the story of Batista trying to get at Triple H and, you know, wanting his attention and attacking Ric Flair before Ric Flair could even make his grand Ric Flair entrance, I think that's awesome. I think that's all awesome character motivation, but I really didn't need that whole, like, this is Paul Levesque talking to Richard Flair type situation. I don't know. What do you make of that?
Yeah, it was a weird segment, wasn't it? Because we had some comedy in there where he was saying that, you know, I'm a busy man. I didn't have time to go to all of, you know, Richard Flair's weddings. So it was like a laugh. And then, you know, moments earlier, he's talking about the death of Flair's son and the fact that, you know, Flair's health problems last year were life-threatening. So it did seem, you know, there was like a lighthearted moment in there. And I just thought, well, you know, that's not really necessary to create the mood that you're seeking here. I enjoyed Batista's message that he sent in via Instagram saying that he wasn't there because he didn't like Philadelphia. That amused me. I see what they're trying to do. I mean, this is not a new thing. I mean, ECW did this all the time, where they would mention the names of the performers' real names, and fans in the crowd would go, ooh, you know, like they were at pantomime or something like that. And it's like, and that used to be always amusing. You do like used to call it, like, you know, as you said, the work shoot or the new work or what. There's all these different names for it, where you try and blend reality and fantasy so no one really knew what was going on, and was it real or was it just mob worked pro wrestling, or is this real, or, you know. And that there is something that has been very successful in the past in pro wrestling, blending the line between reality and fiction. So I think that's what he was seeking here. I enjoyed the promo. I thought he did a good job. Apparently they're going to have a face-to-face on next week's Raw. That was announced, wasn't it?
Yeah, and Batista, I think, in his Instagram video, did say, I just, you know, I basically just don't want to be there. Don't like Philadelphia. We'll see how I feel about Pittsburgh.
Well, wasn't Pittsburgh where that was the 2014 Royal Rumble was in Pittsburgh, wasn't it?
Oh, gosh. I think it was.
I think it was.
It was. I didn't even make that connection. That's going to be amazing. I hope they bring that up.
Yes. So I think they're going to be all right. I think Batista's going to get booed. I was slightly concerned because he's obviously known to most people now as Drax, who is such a fun character mm-hmm. in the Guardians of the Galaxy and the Avengers movies. I mean, I remember going to see that Guardians of the Galaxy 2 last year, I think. Was it last year or was it the year before? I can't remember.
It was the year before.
Year before, that's right. That's right. It was Avengers last year. That's correct. And like, everyone was laughing at everything he said. I mean, he was just in that film, people were just cracking up at the Drax character.
Oh, he's and he fantastic had in those movies.
Yeah, and he had some really good lines in the Avengers movie as well last year, if I recall. And so I was slightly concerned, is he going to get over as a heel? Because people know him as Drax, who's such a fun character. And it does feel like they may have a good shot of getting the reactions they want from this.
Yeah, I think he's been playing his heel character like this very, very well. He really seems to be settling back into the Batista post-heel turn, like after he won the Royal Rumble and then ended up turning heel because that was necessary at that point, right? Because no one was going to cheer him. He seems to kind of have settled back into douchebag Dave Batista, the Hollywood star, entitled guy. And like, if on paper you would have told me that Batista was going to be the heel and Triple H was going to be the babyface in this feud, I would have been like, no, that is a terrible idea. But I think they're playing their roles really well. I think Triple H just talked for too long in this segment too, and I have an aversion to long Triple H promos. But I mean, I think he did deliver it well, and I think the tension between them feels real. Like, for me, I just would have liked if, you know, you said, hey, you attacked Ric Flair at his birthday party. He is my hero. Like, he has always been my inspiration in wrestling. He's my favorite person, basically. And you attacked him before he got to make his grand entrance on his 70th birthday after he almost died last year. I think you could have done all of that storytelling stuff without having to resort to the whole, like, real name for shock value stuff. But I'm more into their feud than I really thought I would be. I mean, before SmackDown 1000, there was no way that I would have been interested in Triple H versus Batista, but they've been doing a really good job of building it. So that's positive.
Yeah, it definitely is. I think next week's segment will be a success. I mean, like I said last week in the podcast with Kenny, I mean, the match is still as a big question mark over that match. I mean, are they going to be able to pull this match off? And I'm not convinced about that at all.
They're going to make it go 40 minutes and I'm going to fall asleep. I mean, like, WrestleMania is very long. I could definitely use a nap, but yes. I feel like they could have a really good, like, 10 to 12 minute match.
Yeah, I think the way it works is they've got to do a gimmick match. I think they've got to do some type of street fight with lots of movement and additional players, including Ric Flair, of course.
Oh, yeah. As many shenanigans as possible, please.
Yeah. I don't think it can be a straight one-on-one match because
it's Triple H, and he has a history at WrestleMania of booking himself into matches that are way too long and way too boring. So I guess we will see what happens there. The only other thing I wanted to mention on Raw, and I don't want to spend too much time on it, but they did have those annoying guest stars from SNL.
Yeah.
And there was the one segment where, you know, they were interrupted by a conga line, which was cool. I love when, you know, I get to spot people. Shout out to Rory Gulak and Gabby Ortiz being in the conga line. But then they had that weird segment with Braun Strowman where they were seeming to try to recreate that Dr. Death Steve Williams segment where the one dude, what is his name? Colin Jost, I think. I don't watch SNL. But he was asking Braun Strowman, like, between you and me, is any of this even real? And then Braun Strowman holds him up against the wall. What even was the point of that?
I don't know. I fear that it's going to lead to something at WrestleMania.
Well, because they're going to be WrestleMania correspondents
yes.
now. They're going to be back.
Yes.
I mean, Braun Strowman's history at WrestleMania is not stellar at this point.
It's not. It's not at all. I mean, it can only lead to something at WrestleMania. You know, so I was just like, oh, no.
And having Braun Strowman involved with these guys at WrestleMania instead of like in a match where he can be Braun Strowman and be awesome is just, it sounds like kind of a bummer to me. I'm just really not all about it.
I think we've left people with that thought and I don't think we should dwell on it anymore because it's depressing enough.
I think we should move on to better pastures, SmackDown pastures, bluer pastures, Finn.
Greener pastures, just as Dean Ambrose is doing, right, Renny?
Dean Ambrose might be headed for Golder pastures. We'll see what's happening. So SmackDown was also like a fairly eventful show. I think there was a little bit more to talk about on Raw, but SmackDown I thought was still pretty enjoyable. We kind of started off with the you know, co-besties in the world, a duo with daddy issues and Uso drama kind of escalating, where the Usos came out and cut a promo on Shane McMahon and The Miz. The Usos are great at these promos. And then The Miz coming back at the Usos too, I thought was really effective. It's kind of like, it's a story that's kind of faded a little bit in terms of like not being the most important part of the show, but I'm still really into it. And I'm kind of excited that they're having another match at Fastlane, even though they're not supposed to do rematch clauses anymore, but apparently like Miz's trope of teaming with a McMahon has proved effective because they can kind of do what they want because Shane's in charge of the show, right? I don't know, what do you, are you still into this whole storyline, or is it just kind of a thing that's happening for you?
Yeah, no, I wanted Miz and Shane McMahon to retain the belts at the Elimination Chamber, wasn't it? That was where the Usos captured the title from Miz and Shane. So I would have liked to have seen Miz and Shane as champs for a little bit longer. It's hard for me to believe that Shane and Miz are going to win the belts from the Usos, because it sort of looks like it's going to be Shane versus Miz, doesn't it, at WrestleMania? Because, I mean, Shane's got to have a big match at WrestleMania. He's one of the stars of the show, of course.
Of course he is.
But I thought, yeah, I thought the Usos, I'm not usually a fan of Usos promos. I think they're all usually very similar, and it's just all based around the welcome, you know, to Usos Penitentiary. And it's, oh, I just find them quite dull. I thought they did a really good job here. And it was good to see Miz score the win in a singles match. And he said beforehand that, you know, if you make any mistakes, I'll capitalize on it. I'll make you pay for it. And then the Usos made a mistake at the end, and then Miz scored the pin. So it was just, you know, standard sort of logical booking, which all made sense and all, I thought, you know, made me more interested in the match. And I'm looking forward to it, I've got to say. It's, as I said, it's hard for me to believe that Shane and the Miz will regain the title.
WWE logic states, I mean, the Miz won here, so probably not going to win at Fastlane. It hasn't been quite as, you know, cut and dry as that in recent times, but
no.
Still, I mean, if you're going by, you know, WWE logic, oh, if this is what happens on Sunday, then they will be the new champions, which means they probably will not be the new champions on Sunday.
Yeah. But I mean, I think Shane versus Miz at WrestleMania, I mean, that's good for The Miz. I mean, it's a good program for The Miz. And since Miz and Mrs. has been renewed, and Miz is certainly a priority right now, I think they're going to want him in a big match at WrestleMania. So that's going to be good for Miz. So
oh, for sure. And I'm glad to see Miz highlighted too. Like, that's definitely, that's a positive of this. And I think the story between Shane and Miz, like, is another thing that if you just presented to me on paper, I would have hated. And it has become one of my favorite things on SmackDown. Like, co-besties in the world, a duo with daddy issues, are just, like, so compelling to me that when they break up, I will probably cry because I love their friendship.
I mean, it's like Fastlane's taking place in Miz's hometown. And
It is.
I believe Miz's dad's going to be at ringside. I think he is. Yeah.
I hope he is, because any mention of any like show of Miz's dad on TV just makes me so incredibly happy, because he's such a bizarre human. I just love him.
That screams angle alert, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Something is happening on Sunday.
Something, and I crave the shenanigans, Finn. I crave them. They're exactly what I want. But after that, R-Truth came out. R-Truth, our, you know, still United States champion at this point, R-Truth, comes out, cuts a promo. I love R-Truth as the biggest John Cena fan. I love him talking about how his hero, John Cena, His childhood hero, John Cena, who is younger than him. Yes, R-Truth is a bizarre human as well. And I adore him. I adore everything he does. I think it's hilarious that he's like, I mean, I didn't realize that John Cena had an open challenge every single week. I did one last week and I'm exhausted. This is a lot. And Carmella, you know, obviously encouraging R-Truth and, you know, saying that he should do this. He does eventually announce another open challenge. Lacey Evans shows up. and then leaves because that's what she does now. And I kind of, I still love it. I think it's hilarious that she shows up and leaves and makes everyone so, so angry at her. I'm not going to lie. I really kind of wanted to see Lacey Evans versus R-Truth at this point, and I was a little disappointed we didn't get it. But what we did get was a Fatal 4-Way match for the United States Championship, because finally, after all of these years, people have figured out, oh, maybe if more than one person do an open challenge, we can just all be in the match together. And why wouldn't more people want a chance at the U.S. title?
Exactly.
So we got, you know, so we got Samoa Joe versus Andrade Cien Almas versus Rey Mysterio versus R-Truth for the United States Championship. And what I did not see coming after this incredibly fun match that I thought was fantastic, I did not expect Samoa Joe to win the United States Championship, Finn, because I thought that for sure we were headed toward Rey Mysterio versus Andrade Cien Almas for the United States Championship, right? Because that seemed to be the logical progression of events. That's not what we got. Kind of spanner in the works here. Samoa Joe is the U.S. champion. What do you make of this? I know you're not the biggest Joe fan, but how did it come across to you?
Yeah, I thought the match was terrific. Yeah, I mean, a profusion of near falls down the home straight. Exuberant crowd. I mean, I really enjoyed it. I thought, I mean, we even had a "This is awesome" chant. And it's so long since we've had one of them that it was actually music to my ear. Music to my ears. Usually I find that chant highly irritating. But this time,
it fit here because it was awesome.
Yeah, it's appropriate. I thought it was a really good match. I didn't see this outcome. I could not have envisioned this outcome either. And I thought Andrade was going over, or potentially Mysterio, and then Mysterio might drop the belt to Andrade at Fastlane or even WrestleMania. Because I kind of pictured Andrade as the US champ, because I just think he's a guy that could go so much further in this company. Just feels like they've got him on the back burner a lot of the time. And as US champ, they'll say, right, now is the time for us to turn up the heat on Andrade and let's make him a star. And I think he's somebody who can be, you know, really big. I think probably what will happen after WrestleMania is he will be moved over to Raw with Zelina Vega, who I believe recently married Aleister Black.
Yes.
I think that's
they are married.
So I would think that that's what will happen after WrestleMania, and maybe Andrade will get a shot at the IC title. Maybe they'll give him a chance there. But I mean, do you think Andrade can become a much bigger star than he is in WWE?
Oh yeah, for sure. And I don't think they've really like pushed him down or like, you know, put him into the ground or like made him forgotten. Like, he is definitely not a Sanity situation or a Nikki Cross situation. Where even is she? Like with Andrade, they seem to have him kind of near main event level, or at least like upper mid card level. I would say kind of almost where Dean Ambrose has been for a long time, where like he was losing to some people, but then, I mean, he started having this feud with Rey Mysterio, got a win over Rey Mysterio, and just felt completely rejuvenated immediately. So he's someone that you can heat up at any time and it feels believable, but they don't necessarily have plans for him to be in the main event scene right now. And that's fine. Like, not everyone can be, but he still feels like a star on the show, and he still feels very effective. I mean, I love Zelina Vega getting involved in the match. I love when, you know, Zelina and Carmella got involved because they can, because it was no disqualification, obviously, right? In the Fatal 4-Way. So that was cool to see too, kind of seeing them get to mix it up and not just be, you know, damsels in distress at ringside like we've seen sometimes. But yeah, Samoa Joe, like, it's interesting that this is Joe's first main roster championship. Obviously, he's NXT champion, but this is the first time he's held gold on the main roster in WWE, and he hasn't been a champion of any kind since 2016. And he's always been, I mean, he feuded with AJ Styles for how long over the WWE championship?
Too long,
because he just kept losing and kept losing and kept losing. So it feels like kind of a big moment and kind of a surprising moment. Like, I told Mr. Sandra, you know, oh yeah, no, Joe's never been a champion on the main roster. And he was just baffled by this because, I mean, like, I'm a Samoa Joe fan. I think he's fantastic. And he always seems like he can carry promo segments and he can carry feuds and he has good matches and then loses them. And he was just starting to feel completely ineffective because all of his threats felt empty because he could never win a thing. And now he won a thing. So I guess we'll see what happens with him having the thing. I mean, we saw on Raw, we talked about the Revival have won a thing and it hasn't gone that well for them. But I'm hoping that Samoa Joe is not the Revival and will, you know, kind of bring some life to the United States Championship. I don't know who's going to be a contender for him, because if Rey and Andrade are kind of off by themselves, I'm kind of curious to see what happens with, are there any contenders you would like to see?
Well, I mean, you're right about Samoa Joe. He was somebody who was almost, he was almost becoming the modern Bray Wyatt, wasn't he?
Yes.
Which is not a flattering comparison. From what Joe was saying afterwards, backstage, it seems like he's going to be facing John Cena at WrestleMania. That's the impression I got from it all. I mean, that seems, why would you book John Cena in a US title match with Samoa Joe? But there again, Samoa Joe wouldn't have brought Cena up for no reason, would he? Cena, maybe, it's hard for me to believe that Joe's going to do like an open challenge at Fastlane and Cena's going to come out. I wouldn't have thought that that would happen. But I would, maybe we'll do one at WrestleMania and Cena will come out. I'm not sure. I mean, as far
that's
as Samoa
actually,
Joe,
you know what? I'm not against that. And especially John Cena having a history with the United States Championship and being kind of the instigator of the U.S. Open Challenge, I think that could be kind of a good story to tell, as long as Joe wins, you know.
Well, I mean, I'm not bothered whether Joe defeats Cena or he doesn't. I mean, Joe is a guy that he's never going any further than this. I mean, you know, remember how he was eliminated at Survivor Series? From the big match. I mean, he was out so quickly. I think was it Drew McIntyre? I believe eliminated him. It was whoever it was who eliminated Samoa Joe. It was astonishing how quickly he was eliminated. And as you say, Joe lost to Styles. I think it was either three or four big match appearances.
I think it was at least four.
I think he ended up replacing somebody, didn't he?
Brian in Saudi Arabia.
That's right. Yeah,
because Brian didn't want to go to Saudi Arabia and they had to have someone face AJ Styles.
That's right, yeah. So I think it ended up being four big match appearances versus Styles, and he lost all four of them. So, I mean, it was for Samoa Joe. I think he's, ever since sort of, really since the Rumble, he's been doing a lot better. He feels more energized. He feels like somebody who's going somewhere and he's putting more into it. And that was the thing that frustrated me about Joe, was that he was somebody I knew could do more than he was putting out. And that feels to me now like he believes that the company's behind him, at least to some extent. And obviously making him US champion to some extent. And he's giving him a real push and a real chance. So I think he's putting a lot more into his performances now than he was last year. And we as viewers are reaping the rewards. So, yeah, I thought this was a really good match. I thought Andrade was going to win. He didn't. Samoa Joe did. Well, let's see where that goes. And I still think Andrade can be a player, but most likely on Raw.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think it opens up some more storytelling possibilities, too, because it gives us a chance to maybe have new opponents for Joe. And then it did come out later in the show that Rey Mysterio and Andrade Cien Almas are going to be facing off at Fastlane on the kickoff show. And my theory is that if there's no cruiserweight title match on the kickoff show, they needed something on the kickoff show that's probably going to steal the night. So they were like, Rey versus Andrade. Why not? Sounds like a plan.
Yeah, the match does kind of feel a bit redundant, though, doesn't it? I mean, why are they wrestling again?
I'm not super sure. Anger, maybe. I don't really know. But I'm not mad at it just because it's such a good match every time. And I'm sure it's going to be fantastic. I kind of really do want to see this match at WrestleMania. And at that point, like, we will have seen it multiple times. So I hope that maybe this match on the kickoff show of Fastlane sets up some sort of stipulation or, you know, furthers a story and makes it necessary for them to fight again. Maybe, like, with some sort of gimmick match or stipulation or something like that. We'll see what happens there and where it goes, but the match should be excellent.
Yeah, definitely.
We also had on the show Ricochet and Aleister Black are still a tag team on both shows, and they defeated The Bar, because apparently The Bar just lose to new NXT call-ups now, and that's what they do. But we also had Rusev and Shinsuke Nakamura attack Ricochet and Aleister Black, because apparently people just don't like Ricochet and Aleister Black and want to attack them all the time, is what I've learned from Raw and SmackDown this week. And the Hardy Boys also kind of join in and make the save, and it's this big schmoz battle. So to me, the SmackDown tag team division almost feels like the opposite of the Raw tag team division, and that we have a bunch of teams here that feel like stars, because The Bar still, to me, feel like stars. And like the Hardy Boys coming back, you know, getting their big return last week and whatnot, like, they feel like players in the tag team division. And Rusev and Nakamura, maybe not so much. They feel a little bit more thrown together, but they are stars in their own right. So whereas the Raw Tag Team Division seems to be just kind of like full of jobber teams and jokes, the SmackDown Tag Team Division almost has too many teams that are super, super good. And it just seems really unbalanced to me.
Yeah, I mean, the good news is if the Usos retain on Sunday, which we both, I'm sure, expect they will, they have some opponents waiting in the wings who have some talent. So that should hopefully set up something decent that's going to get on the main show at WrestleMania and not be on the kickoff, because I know the Usos haven't appeared on too many WrestleManias, and it's like a real bone of contention for them when they don't get booked on the main show.
Well, this past one was the first WrestleMania that they were actually on, wasn't it?
I believe it was. That was the storyline. Yeah, that was something they brought up, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they, I'm sure, will want to defend the title, you know, in a match at WrestleMania that gets some time and is actually promoted correctly. So there's a few teams to choose from there. So, but you're right, I'm in full agreement. The Bar have lost a lot of matches, but Sheamus and Cesaro are such a great team. I mean, they're such fun characters. I think they've got tremendous chemistry. A lot of people don't like Sheamus. I'm a fan of Sheamus and always have been. Even though he was on one of the worst selling issue, cover of one of the worst selling issues of Power Slam ever, I still like him.
I mean, then that says it all, right? No, I'm a Sheamus fan too. I think he's great. And I think especially since joining with Cesaro, I think that's really kind of rejuvenated Sheamus. I like him better in this team than I really did as a single star. So, I mean, I don't know. I've always found him charismatic and a lot of fun. But so my main bone of contention with this episode of SmackDown and SmackDown in general as of late. Last week, we had zero women's matches on the show. We had a Charlotte Flair promo. That was what the women did on SmackDown last week. This week, we did have a women's match. It lasted about 45 seconds. Mandy Rose defeated Naomi. Why are Mandy Rose and Naomi still fighting? We don't know. Why is Mandy Rose just pinning Naomi, former two-time SmackDown Women's Champion, in 45 seconds? We don't know. Asuka does attack Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville after the match, so it kind of sets up their, you know, some more dissension leading to Asuka versus Mandy Rose at Fastlane. But this is just so incredibly frustrating to me, Finn, because the SmackDown Women's Division, I agree with Kenny when he says that there are not enough stars in the division to really be doing much with it. But this is not the way to build stars. This is not the way to make me care about the women in the division. Just putting them in a 45-second match and then just kind of having this kind of lazy attack and whatnot. At least Asuka didn't look like an idiot this week. But I'm just like baffled by the treatment of Asuka. Asuka, who tapped Becky Lynch out clean at the Royal Rumble. We thought finally she feels like Asuka again. This was a great decision for Becky Lynch to tap out to Asuka, because Becky Lynch still feels like a star, wins the Royal Rumble, goes on to do amazing things like she has done. And then Asuka's just off TV for a long time. And then when Asuka comes back to TV, she loses to Mandy Rose. And then she does not appear on SmackDown to address her loss to Mandy Rose last week. And this week, she just attacks her from behind, and it took her like a week to get there. And we're not seeing Asuka look like a killer or like any sort of threat. And she's the champion, and she just seems to be forgotten. And I'm going crazy, Finn. Like, what do you make of all of this?
Well, just as you say, lazy, so just deeply unimaginative. As you said, Mandy Rose scored that upset win 2 weeks ago. There was no follow up on last week's SmackDown, but we did get a Mandy Rose promo on WWE.com. In which she confirmed that she would face Asuka at Fastlane. No acknowledgement, no response from Asuka, not even on WWE.com last week. And then this week, as she said, we had a Mandy Rose versus Naomi match, Rose winning in 45 seconds. I mean, it's not long since Mandy Rose and Naomi were in this bitter feud.
Yeah.
In which Naomi was far more competitive than this. One of these weird rules of pro wrestling, isn't it? It's like when someone turns heel that they, you know, suddenly, you know, no longer heroic and, you know, no longer brave, and they're now cowardly. You know, it's funny. One of these real weird rules of pro wrestling that we just have to suspend our disbelief to make it all work. And then Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville are there on the stage, and we see Asuka behind them, and she effortlessly crushed them both. Do we even need to see the match at Fastlane on Sunday, Sandra? I mean, this is such a horrific beating. I mean, they offered no resistance at all. And it wasn't like Mandy Rose had just been through this epic match, as you said it on the last 5 seconds. So this was dreadful, dire, just rotten. Piss poor.
I'm glad you agree with me. I'm glad that you're not trying to defend this in any way, because my head would explode. But yeah, it's just, the whole thing is just incredibly frustrating. And I mean, like you say, if Asuka can effortlessly beat Sonya Deville and Mandy Rose on the ramp the way that she did, it doesn't really make me want to see the match. Like, it makes me want to see Asuka just, you know, pin Mandy Rose in 45 seconds maybe and be done with this whole situation. Yeah. But it frustrates me that, I mean, obviously Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair are involved with the Raw title. And the problem is that Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair and Asuka are kind of like the three big stars on SmackDown in terms of the women's division, right? Like, Naomi getting pinned in 45 seconds is kind of problematic because Naomi is a star. I don't think she's necessarily very good. I've never been the biggest fan of Naomi wrestling, but she does have some star power and she has a lot of goodwill with fans. She has a lot of fans of Naomi. So to have her be pinned and look like nothing, like, you should take the wrestlers that have goodwill with the fans and feel like they're something and try to elevate them a little, right? Like, that's kind of what they're doing with Mandy Rose. They're trying to build her into more of a thing, but at the expense of the rest of the roster. That's not very helpful. And also, like, I don't like that the SmackDown women's division seems to be just kind of sacrificed and forgotten because the Raw women's division has taken center stage. You can do both. Like, you can tell multiple stories with women and it will be fine. I promise. It's a thing that can happen. That's all very frustrating to me. We did have Kevin Owens facing Eric Rowan, and he beat Eric Rowan by disqualification when Daniel Bryan attacked him. And at the end, Daniel Bryan and Eric Rowan are beating down Kevin Owens. And then glorious Mustafa Ali, hero of my heart, returns. And he kind of assists Kevin Owens, which is a very interesting pairing to me. But Mustafa Ali still being kind of involved with the Daniel Bryan, Eric Rowan situation, I think is good. I was nervous for Mustafa Ali when he got injured. I hoped that they would bring him back with some prominence. And it seems like they have. It seems like he's still kind of circling around that title picture. So I enjoy that. I think the Kevin Owens dynamic here has been very interesting. Like, Kevin Owens being kind of a good dude and being kind of a babyface. Like, I was real nervous when Vince McMahon brought out Kevin Owens as the replacement for Kofi Kingston.
Yeah.
I thought, like, are we going to have, like, corporate heel Kevin Owens versus vegan heel Daniel Bryan? But it seems like Kevin Owens is just a good dude who couldn't say no to an opportunity. And that's some interesting character work, I think. What do you make of that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Owens is probably one of the few guys on the roster who could have got away with this. I mean, last week he was sent out to replace Kofi Kingston, who's got all this love right now. I mean, it was very smart this week where they said that New Day are not there. They're on this promotional tour in Mumbai, India, and they sent in a little video. So it was really good that they've been kept at a distance because people are supposed to cheer Kevin Owens. They're not supposed to resent him for replacing Kofi Kingston.
Exactly.
So the fact that Owens was able to actually pull this off is a real testament to how over he is and how good he is as a performer. I mean, he's been a great performer for nigh on 10 years. So, I mean, it's like he has pulled this off tremendously. I really enjoyed the opening segment where Daniel Bryan and Eric Rowan were out there and they said that Kofi Kingston was a supporting player and he deserved to be replaced. He didn't deserve to face Daniel Bryan at Fastlane. But then Bryan said that Kevin Owens wasn't a worthy replacement for Kofi Kingston. He ate too many pancakes. Then they got into this whole thing of Owens came out and he said, well, you're using these low-brow, unimaginative insults, knocking me from my weight. And then that all came into a thing about what was low-brow. Bryan said that the audience was low-brow, and that's why they could relate to Kevin Owens. And Bryan's saying that, you know, the pressure's on him because the weight of the planet is on his shoulders. So, I mean, that was really good. The part I liked the most about this opening segment was when Kevin Owens vowed to dethrone Daniel Bryan at Fastlane, and Bryan looked really worried. He looked really concerned. It was just a real subtle thing. And you could see there was this, like, oh no, you know, this real sense of threat. He was there acknowledging with his facial expressions that Kevin Owens could defeat him. And then Rowan was sent in to stand in front of Brian, and there was this big brawl, and then that set up the Owens versus Rowan match later on the card. And that was quite funny as well, because it was totally overshadowed by Daniel Bryan on commentary, but that was fine because Rowan's never going to get over. He's never going to be anything more than what he is. And this was just designed to promote the Daniel Bryan versus Kevin Owens match. So who really cares about Rowan? And I thought,
I care Bryan about was Rowan.
Well, as you, Sandra, does anyone else? Do you have company in that club?
I feel like he's actually, this is the best possible use of Eric Rowan, actually. Like, I mean, him being Daniel Bryan's enforcer and him being, you know, big beardy man who wears awesome band t-shirts and cares about the planet. I think this is great. Like, I think he's more effective here than he was in the Wyatt family.
Well, I mean, the Wyatt family did have that tremendous run, didn't they, at the beginning of 2000s.
They did. But, I mean, well, like, it sort of petered out, right? And I think that Daniel Bryan is a more effective leader than Bray Wyatt at this point. I think we can kind of agree on that. And I'm saying this as, like, sure. Bray Wyatt was my favorite wrestler for a long time. And I love Bray Wyatt, and I always will. But he just kind of, like, petered out in terms of effectiveness. And Daniel Bryan actually being the champion. And I don't know, there's just something about these beardy bastards that works for me. I really, really like them together. They're fantastic.
Right, okay. Well, yeah, I mean, Rowan and Harper were actually a really good team. They had a tremendous feud with the Usos, didn't they, in 2014?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, they were fantastic. Speaking of, where's Luke Harper? Where is he? Has anyone seen him? That fine specimen of a human belongs on my television screen, and he's not there, and I'm very upset about it.
Well, I mean, he was a guy that, you know, he suffered a knee injury about a couple of years ago, and came back, lost a ton of weight. He was in tremendous shape. And I remember seeing some interviews with him on YouTube, and the guy's so articulate. I mean, why does he not do promos? I just never been able to understand that one.
I don't understand it either. He's great at speaking. He's great at wrestling. He looks incredible. He's fantastic. And I love him with all of my heart. And where is he?
So anyway, I guess came back to Daniel Bryan. So this love fest for Luke Harper. So Daniel Bryan's there on commentary, and he's just hilarious. He's there, he's calling Owens a lazy coward, and he's standing up and he's getting Owens' face. And then Bryan attacks as a big brawl. And as you said, Mustafa Ali came out. I personally think Mustafa Ali is doomed unless he turns heel. That's his only hope. I mean, he's got no charisma. He's got no character. He's a good performer. But the guy's got to turn. He's got to turn into a what about me villain. That's what he's got to do.
Breaking my heart right now. I love Mustafa Ali. I think he has all kinds of charisma. Like, I mean, maybe it's just because I watch 205 Live and I've seen a bunch of his promos and whatnot. Like, his promos are fantastic. The way he builds to matches and whatnot, like his self-filmed promos that he does, they've really gotten me behind him. And a lot of people that I know too really enjoy Mustafa Ali. So it's interesting to hear that he doesn't have charisma. Like, is he just not working for people on the main roster as well as he does?
I don't think
watching 205 Live.
I mean, I did watch 205 Live a couple of weeks ago for the first time in a while, and I have to say that the matches were really good, but they were not connecting with the audience until the very end, you know, when these guys had worked their socks off to try and get a response. And I know it's partly because there's so few people in the building, but 205 Live just feels like a flat brand to me. And Mustafa Ali is somebody who's a tremendous in-ring performer. I don't think he's connecting with the audiences on the main roster. You know, let's give him a chance, right? Maybe he will. But I think his future is as a villain. That's how I think he's going to get over, if he ever can, on the main roster.
Oh, man. If he turns heel, like, my heart will be broken. I'll cry for a week. I won't really cry for a week, but I'll be really sad because he's such a good dude. Like, I don't know. For me, he's one of those guys who's just so good at being a babyface, and I think that's rare. Like, he connects with me in the same way that, like, a Sami Zayn does, or, like, a Daniel Bryan did before he decided to be vegan warrior heel man. So it's interesting, but I guess we'll see what happens with Mustafa Ali, and we'll see if he can kind of like stick around this storyline. I still would quite like to see Mustafa Ali versus Daniel Bryan at some point. Maybe that could be like, depending on what happens at WrestleMania, we could maybe kind of set up a story there. I don't know. Like, there are a lot of players and there are a lot of things kind of up in the air with the WWE title scene, because it kind of depends if they decide to ride this Kofi Kingston wave of momentum to a title win, or if it's one of those heartbreaking situations where he gets his big match and his big moment in the sun and he gets to have his WrestleMania match and fall short. Like, that's one of the fascinating stories, I think, going into WrestleMania for me. So I guess we'll see what happens. But
I mean, the all wins thing, I think, has been very well done. I mean, he's getting the correct responses, which is quite amazing when you think of what's happened, and that it was Vince that was the one who inserted him in the match and as a replacement for Kofi, who's got, you know, tremendous momentum right now. So it is amazingly working. I mean, this was a risky move by WWE, but I've got to give them credit. They've pulled it off.
Like, can you imagine 2 months ago, if you had said, yeah, Daniel Bryan and Kofi Kingston and Kevin Owens are going to be in a program for the WWE title?
Well, what? Yeah.
But yeah, it's working, exactly. And it's a testament to them and to their storytelling.
And that's what's so frustrating. I'm sure you share my views on this one, is that WWE can get it right. They know how to get it right. And when they get it right, they do stuff better than anyone else. And why don't they get it right more often?
Yeah, because when they try and when they want to try, they do very well. When they don't want to try, we get things like the SmackDown Women's Division and the Raw Tag Team Division that just, you know, are exercises in frustration. Yeah. But to close out the show, Charlotte Flair calls out Becky Lynch. And, you know, Becky is, like we said, I mean, is she just going to show up like on a cot in a neck brace? Like, it's almost comical at this point. It almost feels slapstick that she's added more injuries, right? Like, she's hobbling on a crutch. She's talking about how she has bruised ribs. She's talking about how, you know, her arm almost got broken last night. She's not looking in a good way, but she's definitely going to fight, you know, like she's definitely going to fight at Fastlane. So Charlotte and Becky, obviously, their friendly discussion does not end up so friendly because Becky Lynch, you know, fights Charlotte back and, you know, like she fights her with a crutch and she does get the disarmer on Charlotte until, you know, referees kind of break it up and we kind of go off the air with Becky and Charlotte again, which is giving me hope that they will be the actual main event at WrestleMania because they still seem to be the biggest story on the show. I don't know that we got any new information here, but I think Charlotte and Becky are both playing their roles well. I think this, in terms of Charlotte and Becky, I think this was more effective than Raw at showing their characters because I think Becky did get to have, you know, some comeuppance and get to feel like more of a person.
Yeah, she got the comeback here, didn't she? So it was really good to see that here.
Yeah, for sure. Because, I mean, we don't want to see Becky Lynch just like constantly beaten into the ground. And Charlotte Flair is just such an enjoyable prick, right? Like she's just wooing in Becky's face and she's, you know, talking about she's the goddess and she's so entitled and all this stuff. I don't know. I think that we didn't necessarily get like new information or furthering the story, but it makes me excited for Charlotte versus Becky at Fastlane, which is a match we've seen so many times and I'm still quite looking forward to it. So I guess that's a testament to them as well.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing is, the women were in the last segment of both Raw and SmackDown, weren't they?
They were, which is awesome to see. Like, that's not something that, you know, I really thought was possible a couple years ago. So it's awesome. Like, I really, really enjoy seeing that.
Can I just mention a couple more things about the Charlotte thing?
Yeah, absolutely.
Earlier on the program, she actually did a promo backstage about the stipulation in the Fastlane match, and Charlotte blew the promo and she apologized. Heels don't apologize. That cracked me up. I thought that was just hilarious.
Oh, she that's right. What did she say again? I'm trying to remember.
She said if Becky loses to her at Fastlane, she's done. And then she said, oh, no, it means that she's not in the WrestleMania main event.
Oh, right.
Yeah. But I mean, it was an easy, because it is kind of a tricky one to explain. So, I mean, it was just amusing that she apologized. And it was just like, heels don't apologize. So that just amused me. I mean, let's face it, on podcasts, I make enough blunders. So, I mean, I'm not trying to hold my hand up here and say, oh, I'm infallible. I'm perfect. Of course I'm not. I make blunders as well. And like, certainly anyone who does a podcast does. But it was, anyway, it just amused me that her as a heel apologized. Also in the segment, as you said, Charlotte invited Becky Lynch to the ring for a friendly discussion, which we knew wouldn't be friendly. And Charlotte was beating her down and Lynch did get to make the comeback, which was really good to see. What was amusing to me was that Becky got the disarmer on, right? And then all the referees come out and everything. And they're trying to get Lynch off Charlotte. And throughout the whole thing, Charlotte's wearing a Rolex.
I didn't notice that. That's amazing.
I swear she's wearing a Rolex. It looked like a very expensive watch, and obviously her dad was the Rolex wearing one. So I think it was a Rolex. So it looked like an expensive watch. I'm thinking, are they going to break that watch? And you can see, obviously they've been very careful, but like hands were all around her wrist because they were trying to get Becky off, and it was supposed to look like it was, you know, Becky was offering resistance and it was a struggle. And I can confirm, or at least I believe, that Charlotte's watch survived.
Well, I'm thankful for that, because we would hate for Charlotte to have to replace that very expensive watch at the hands of dastardly Becky Lynch.
You know, I think it'd be funny if it'd be like a rib on anyone who was paying attention that closely, that it was like some crappy imitation Rolex.
Yeah.
That would be the ultimate rib.
That'd be great if it was just a knockoff they got on the street.
Exactly.
That's fantastic. So yeah, I mean, I thought it was an effective way to end SmackDown. I liked SmackDown overall. The women's stuff really, really frustrates me. But the rest of the show, I think, is kind of hitting on all cylinders right now. And it's kind of an easy 2 hours to watch, right? Like, I don't know if I came out of it with like as much like newsworthy stuff, but Samoa Joe as champion, they've thrown kind of a wrench into the works there. I think they're doing some really good stuff. So did you want to do some Fastlane predictions real quick?
Yeah, and I agree. Yeah, I thought SmackDown, we also had a little backstage confrontation as well between AJ Styles and Randy Orton. That was really brief, and that's apparently going to settle the Styles versus Orton match at WrestleMania that they've been talking about for a while. So that was, again, something really minor. That's good that it's a story that's, you know, got some continuity to it. So and they're not rushing it or anything like that. So I enjoyed that. Overall, yeah, I was happy with SmackDown as well.
I kind of keep forgetting about AJ Styles and Randy Orton. I mean, obviously, Randy Orton, not exactly my favorite performer. And AJ Styles just kind of there. So it's that match on the WrestleMania card that's rumored. And I think they're actually doing a good job of building tension between the two of them. Just Randy Orton being such a dick and AJ Styles being kind of AJ Styles. I guess he's valiant or whatever. I don't know. Like, what even is he? He's just AJ Styles at this point, right?
You know, he's like a librarian or something, isn't he, that decided to become a wrestler. Mild-mannered guy, you know. So no, I think it's good as well that they're limiting their TV time, because we saw too much of AJ last year. Randy Orton, I mean, let's face it, the guy's been around since 2002 on the main roster. So we don't need to see that much of Randy. And I think he's more effective using small doses. So I think they're doing a good job there promoting this. And hopefully they'll have that match. And, you know, these two guys can have a hell of a match. They can have a match at WrestleMania if they're motivated to do so. So, yeah, let's get to Fastlane and those predictions.
Yeah, okay. So for the WWE Championship, we're going to have Daniel Bryan versus Kevin Owens, because Kofi Kingston has been taken out of it. What do you think is going to happen here? Because I'm guessing, like, for me, I feel like Daniel Bryan is going to retain his WWE Championship. Do you think there are going to be any shenanigans? Or
yes, I think there'll be. I agree with you. I think Daniel Bryan will retain. I think Owens will be protected on the finish. I don't think it'll be a clean pin by any means. Could even be a non-finish. We could even have a DQ or something silly. Maybe. I can't imagine the New Day will. Maybe the New Day will get involved. They said they're going to be at Fastlane. So maybe
they did say they're going to be in Fastlane. That's true. And I'm sure Kofi Kingston is going to have his eye on this match, because he, you know, still definitely wants his shot at the WWE title. So
sure.
New Day shenanigans. I would love for a returning Sami Zayn to ally with Daniel Bryan. That is, you know, in my heart of hearts, that's what I want. I don't know if we'll get that, but I guess we shall see.
Yeah, that could be a potential outcome as well. But yeah, definitely Bryan to retain.
Becky Lynch versus Charlotte Flair. If Becky Lynch wins this match, she is added to the main event of WrestleMania and it becomes a triple threat. If she loses the match, then she buys a ticket and hangs out in concessions, I guess.
I think at that point, if she doesn't win, maybe she could just check herself into hospital.
Right? At that point, it seems like she might have to.
Hopefully she's got good health insurance, right?
Right, exactly.
She's got to be in a long time.
So, I mean, I think this one's...
This is open, isn't it? I mean, this is as clear cut as it gets.
I mean, unless they decide to really go full, like, Attitude Era and not make the triple threat out of this match. Like, Becky Lynch has to win this match. She just has to, right?
She's got to win. I mean, she's got to win. There's just no way she can lose this match.
I think we agree on that. And I don't need any more complicated shenanigans with this story. They've already convoluted it so much. Like, I want the triple threat. I like twists and turns, but like, I'm ready for us to just be on the road to the triple threat at WrestleMania. The match that I forgot was happening, even though we talked about it at length, the Shield versus Drew McIntyre, Baron Corbin, and Bobby Lashley. What do you think is going to happen here?
Rollins and Reigns, fools to trust Dean Ambrose. I mean, he'll probably turn on them. He'll probably cost them the match again. So, I know you would think that the Shield are going to win, in all seriousness, because this is Roman Reigns's, you know, big pay-per-view return. It's like Seth Rollins is facing Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. It's got to be a Shield win. It has to be. What do you think?
I agree. I want it to be a Shield win. I definitely want it to be a Shield win. I have this nagging, like, worry that they're going to be like, oh, but we could get major heat on Drew McIntyre, Baron Corbin, and Bobby Lashley, who apparently they seem to think are very interesting, even though they are not very interesting, Finn. They are not interesting at all. So I almost worry that they'll try and, you know, have the villains stand tall over the Shield. But I mean, I'm going to go with a Shield win here. I think Roman Reigns should hit a spear and a Superman punch and pin Baron Corbin and maybe just get Baron Corbin out of the ring for quite a while, because that would be lovely.
It's got to be as well. And also, if say Dean Ambrose does the job and the Shield lose, it kind of prolongs the whole thing, and then we'll have to have a rematch on Raw, which we don't really need. So please allow the Shield to win.
Yeah, because it's not, I mean, this is really kind of it for the Shield, right? Because we don't get a Shield match at WrestleMania because Seth Rollins is facing Brock Lesnar. So there isn't an opportunity for it. I think we need another big Shield win. Yes, I am definitely going with that. SmackDown Women's Championship, Asuka versus Mandy Rose. If Asuka doesn't win this match, I will set myself on fire.
I think Asuka's going to win. I hope so, because otherwise, you know, I'm figuring you better have good health insurance.
I have no health insurance, so if I have to set myself on fire, then I'm bankrupt too.
Right, okay, well, Asuka better win this match.
I won't actually. I'm like terrified of fire. I don't know why I would ever make that claim. I'm not Kane, goodness sake. So Asuka needs to win. She just has to. SmackDown Tag Team Championship. The Usos are facing co-besties in the world, a duo with daddy issues, The Miz and Shane McMahon. What do you think is going to happen here? I know we kind of talked about it earlier.
We did. I think I made the prediction earlier that the Usos would retain and that then there would be some kind of event between Miz and Shane, Miz's dad. I can't see Vince making an appearance because I don't think he would. I just don't think he would, but that would be amusing if Vince was involved as well. That would just be
awesome. I really want a confrontation between Vince and Mrs. Dad. Like, I want that with all of my heart. I think that would be incredible. I don't think it's going to happen either, but that's like, can you imagine Vince McMahon and Mr. Mizanin?
Well, Vince is an intimidating guy. Everyone knows he is. Everyone knows that Vince is an intimidating guy. So can you imagine as a non-performer trying to do some type of angle with Vince on a live pay-per-view? I wouldn't want to do that. So.
But the thing is, though, George Mizanin is such a weird human that, like, I feel like he's one of the only people who wouldn't be intimidated by Vince because he's just so strange and so, like, all about his schemes and shenanigans. Like, oh my gosh, it could be incredible. if we don't get it on the pay-per-view, I really hope we get it on Miz and Mrs. at some point, because I definitely watch that show. But I think the Usos are going to retain here. I think that you're right. We are headed toward, you know, the breakup of co-besties in the world, a duo with daddy issues. I think that it is going to be Miz versus Shane McMahon at WrestleMania. So, and the Usos being champions just makes sense. They're great as champions. They can definitely continue to carry the belts. Women's Tag Team Championship, which is a thing. I mean, we didn't talk on Raw. Tamina beat Sasha Banks, I think, and people were kind of upset about that.
Not a memorable match at all, was it?
Not memorable. What was memorable? Did you see the Iconics promo that they cut on Twitter?
No, I didn't, but I heard about it.
Okay, it's fantastic. They're basically like, hey, Hey, Boston Hug Connection, have you seen the boss, Sasha Banks, and or the hugger, Bailey? Have you seen them? They are not on SmackDown. Where are they? Why aren't they coming to SmackDown? Why aren't we getting an opportunity to challenge for the Women's Tag Team Championships? So at least the Iconics are doing their due diligence on social media, even if they can't be presented on the actual show. But it was a fantastic promo where they call out Bailey and Sasha Banks, and I want the Iconics versus Bailey and Sasha Banks. I think that could be incredible. But they are not facing them at Fastlane. They're facing Nia Jax and Tamina. Who do you think are going to take home the Women's Tag Team Championship?
It's got to be Sasha and Bailey have got to retain. Nia and Tamina just feel cold. I mean, I wanted them to win at Elimination Chamber because I feel like that would have been bigger if they'd been the first champs. And then they could have done Sasha and Bailey versus Nia and Tamina and given Sasha and Bailey the happy ending at WrestleMania. I would have preferred that outcome. I mean, it's sad, really, because whoever emerges from Fastlane as champs, who are they going to wrestle next? Who are they going to defend against next? Apart from the Iconics, who I actually think are, I really enjoy the characters. I think they're a lot of fun. I mean, they did have a good night at Elimination Chamber. I'll give them that. But generally in the ring, it's amateur hour. I'm sorry, Sondra. It just is.
With Billy Kay, for sure it is. I think Peyton's actually pretty good. But Billy Kay is also there for sure. I think their character kind of, like, for me anyway, their character carries them a lot, and it gives me a lot more goodwill toward them. And I think that if they're in there with opponents like Sasha and Bailey, who are very skilled wrestlers, then I think it could be really great. I agree with you. I think Sasha and Bailey definitely need to win this match. And yeah. I think I would like to see the Iconics be their next feud. Also, Mandy and Sonya, I think, could be interesting choices.
Well, possibly, except for we know that Mandy and Sonya are going to get destroyed by Asuka on Sunday, and actually just got destroyed on SmackDown this week.
So they might have to check themselves into hospital with Becky Lynch.
Well, exactly. So, I mean, it's like, why is WWE not creating a team? Why are they not building another team up that could be viewed as contenders after Fastlane?
Because they need more women on the roster.
Well, I guess there's that, yeah. But, I mean, I don't know. So, yeah, I'm imagining that Banks and Bailey will retain. Maybe they'll then have another match on Raw the following night, and that'll be the end of the feud. I'm not sure. And maybe the Iconics will be, maybe then Banks and Bailey will make an appearance on SmackDown the following night. Maybe that will happen.
Which I would like, because, I mean, we did see Sasha and Bailey on NXT saying that the belts are going to be defended across all three shows. So, I mean, they actually do have a team, depending on what happens with Io Shirai and Bianca Belair and whatnot. I mean, Sky Pirates versus Sasha and Bailey actually is the feud I want to see next.
Yeah, I mean,
because I think that would be incredible.
Oh, definitely. I mean, absolutely it would be. So maybe we'll get that next.
Let us hope. The Raw Tag Team Championship. It's going to be The Revival versus Aleister Black and Ricochet versus Bobby Roode and Chad Gable. Thrown together tag teams all over the place. And The Revival, who are the champions, but you wouldn't know it from how often they've been winning on Raw. What do you think is going to happen here? Because this is one that I can't actually call. Like, I feel like Aleister Black and Ricochet are probably going to win just by default because they have been kind of considered the most important, but it seems weird to me to put the tag team championships on them and have them continue to be in a tag team situation when they're both so promising as single stars. I don't know. Yeah. Like, I almost feel like the Revival might win via shenanigans or something. What do you think?
I think Revival will retain. And I think what will happen is the main thing coming out of that match will be Black and Ricochet versus Gable and Roode. And the Revival will be lost as tag team champions and never to be heard from or seen again.
So no, contenders, and we will cry.
Yeah, so I think Revival will retain, but really the focus will be on the Aleister Black and Ricochet versus Bobby Roode and Chad Gable feud. That's what I took from this week's events on Raw.
That would make sense to me. I'm just going to go ahead and agree. And then the final match, Rey Mysterio versus Andrade Cien Almas on the kickoff show. Who do you think is going to win this one? Because I guess they've kind of cooled off on storytelling between the two of them. They're just still kind of fighting.
I think I would like
to see Andrade win, personally.
I think Rey's going to get his win back. Because, I mean, okay. he's put Andrade over. I think it's time for Rey to get a win. I mean, he's still over, but I think Rey needs a win more than Andrade here. I'm convinced that Andrade's moving over to Raw. So from this point forward, his career on SmackDown, he's not going to be featured. He's not going to be a featured player there. So I think it's going to be Ray's time to win. And, you know, it's Ray's done a great job elevating Andrade, I feel, by putting him over. And I think the matches have been really good. And I think Ray's done a good job of reheating himself as well by giving so much to this feud. I mean, when he returned, I was thinking, oh, it's just going to be a nostalgia act. And he's been anything but. He's been a real contributor. You know, he's not been a passenger on the ship. You know, he's been somebody who's there working to make this ship go faster. So, I mean, he's you know, really earned my respect since he's returned. So I'm figuring I think Ray's going over. But that's all right, because Andrade is going over to Raw, where he's going to become a star. I hope so, too.
I mean, like, whether he goes to Raw or not, I think I'm going to say Andrade wins via shenanigans, like via Zelina Vega type shenanigans. And that could maybe further the feud, because I still do want to see this match at WrestleMania. I don't know if we will. I think it kind of depends on whether we want to see this feud again, what happens, because I don't know. Then I guess having Rey get his, or maybe like Rey Mysterio wins and then that furthers the feud somehow and we still get to them at WrestleMania. I just want to see them at WrestleMania. But I guess, yeah, I don't really know. I can't really call this one. I'm bad at predictions sometimes. But yeah, so I mean, that's Fastlane. I'm kind of looking forward to the show. It sounds like pretty much all of the matches are going to be good. And if Asuka versus Mandy Rose lasts longer than like 5 minutes, what even are we doing here?
Yeah, I agree. I think, I mean, this, as you say, apart from Mandy Rose versus Asuka, there's not a dud on that show. I mean, every match has got the potential to be at least good or better.
Yeah, I mean, even Bayley and Sasha versus Nia and Tamina could be fun. Like, I mean, as long as Tamina's not in there too much.
Yeah, yeah. The heat extinguisher. That's what she is, isn't she? I mean,
she really is. She's baffling. Absolutely baffling. But thanks for joining me today, Finn, on this like sort of mashup edition of Inside the Ropes / Power Slam / whatever it is we're doing here. I'm glad that we could.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Thanks for talking. Get together.
Well, hopefully we have. I mean, that'll be up to the public to decide. So
maybe, you know, we'll see if everyone's like, they should never podcast together again. If they want to tell you that we should never podcast together again, where can they find you on the internet?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Finley Martin. My website is finleymartin.co.uk, as people know. And where can they find you, Sandra?
You can find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. You can obviously follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, for tons of bonus content. Kenny and I will be reviewing Fastlane up on Patreon after this weekend. Yeah, there's all sorts of stuff going up on Patreon that kind of allows us to be able to podcast. So we appreciate everyone who supports us there. Go to youtube.com/InsideTheRopes for tons of interview content. InsideTheRopes.co.uk/Goldust if you want last minute tickets to Goldust for the remaining tour dates. And I think that's it. I'm doing like, I normally have this whole spiel like completely like down to a pat, and it's, I don't know. It's throwing me all off today. I don't really know what's going on, but who's, so I guess we just need to choose theme music to play us out, because that's something we kind of do here. I know you and Power Slam have your own theme music, but is there anyone who stuck out to you this week, Finn?
Probably, let me think, who's stuck? Well, I think we've got to go with Samoa Joe. I mean, usually not my favorite, but he had a really good week. Emerged from the fatal four-way as the new US champ. He's got to be the man of the week.
I agree. I like this choice. I like his tune, too. It's kind of good. So thank you, everybody, for listening, and I will talk to you soon. Bye.